will be in the studio. Yeah, I'd almost pay them to come to work. I'm done. James O'Brien's the other side of the news here on LBC. I'm back with you tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, stay safe.
Thank you, Nick. The time is approaching 10 o'clock, and I suppose it's almost reassuring or encouraging that we can still be taken by surprise by the contortions of some elements of the media in this country. Having spent years pandering to his every utterance and rolling out red carpets for every studio in the land, Nigel Farage has somehow ended up at the top of the polls. He is the gravest threat to the governing party. So when the leader of the governing party calls the man out, quite mildly, given all of the other ammunition that he could have deployed to remind voters of how disgusting Farage's past associations and opinions are, they have a collective hissy fit, the likes of which I have never seen before.
What? On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, Sir Keir Starmer's told LBC he'd like to see his former deputy, Angela Rayner, back in frontline politics. She was forced to step down last month in a row over the stamp duty paid on a flat in Hove. Several ministers backed her return at Labour's conference in Liverpool. The Prime Minister was asked if he agreed.
Yes, I mean, I said when Ange stepped down that she had been a major voice in the Labour movement and that she would be a major voice for many years to come. I was personally very sad to see her go. I mean, if you talk about social mobility, there is no greater story than Angela Rayner.
You can watch the rest of Sir Keir's interview with Nick Ferrari on the LBC app. There is growing speculation about the future of the two-child benefit cap. Treasury officials are said to be looking at scrapping the limit and replace it with a tapered benefit system. The Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, says she will only make spending commitments when she can show how they'll be funded. Dan Paskins is from Save the Children. He's welcomed the reports.
It's something which the families we work with tell us it's not going to be life-changing amounts of money, but it's a real practical help to be able to afford some of the basics. So, you know, going into winter, you know, needing a new coat for the winter, new shoes, not having to skip meals, you know, the sort of pressures which many families are facing.
President Trump has warned he could make irreversible cuts during a US government shutdown. Funding for services was cut off at midnight after the Democrats refused to back a Republican spending plan. Hundreds of thousands of federal workers will be furloughed until the row is settled. It's claimed business confidence among company bosses fell to its lowest level on record last month. The Institute of Directors says higher labour costs was the biggest concern in its latest survey. Scientists have developed a new technique which could pave the way for new treatments for Parkinson's. It allows them to see tiny clusters of proteins in the brain which are believed to trigger the disease. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was up 21 at 93.71. The pound buys $1.34 and a euro 14. LBC weather, any early fog clearing to leave sunny spells for many places, cloudier with heavy rain in the north, a high of 19 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
Angela Rippon, what are you doing here?
I've come to tell you about using energy flexibly, Albert.
Flexibly?
Yes, smart meter owners could get rewarded for moving their energy use, like doing the laundry at off-peak times.
So I don't need to do the splits?
No, Albert, nobody wants to see that.
Get rewarded for using energy flexibly, only with a smart meter. Search Get a Smart Meter today.
Eligibility and availability vary. Consumer action required. Reward schemes and tariffs available to selected customers from selected suppliers.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 3 minutes after 10 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. And I mean it, you know, I do sometimes derive pleasure from being surprised. I think you could allow me a description as a fairly enthusiastic chronicler of the madness of right-wing media in this country and right-wing politics. It's important to remember they've won everything in recent years. So what is the traditional traditional party of the right in the United Kingdom? Correct. Yes. The Conservatives. Does anyone remember them? And they have more or less disappeared from political discourse. Why? Because they kept winning. Have you clocked this? You must have done. They kept winning. They've won every battle. If you were to look at the last 10 years of Daily Mail front pages, they've won every single battle, apart from the last general election, which they'd kind of given up on from months out. They've won every single battle. The stink tanks on Tufton Street even got their woman into Downing Street to introduce the economic policies that they'd spent decades claiming would make the world a better place. They've won every single battle. They won Brexit. They won the referendum. They got the austerity. They got swingeing cuts to public sector spending, hitting the most vulnerable people in this country hardest. They got Boris Johnson into Downing Street, their ultimate darling, their favourite joker. Boris Johnson goes from Daily Telegraph jester to Prime Minister of these islands. They got Boris Johnson into Downing Street. They resisted the march of reality. All of those people charged with trying to remind the British public of reality and hopefully derail or dilute Brexit, they saw them off. They crushed the saboteurs. They succeeded. They won that as well. And then when Boris Johnson finally got faced the consequences of his own moral corruption and his own lies and his own disgraceful conduct, when their darling fell, they gave him £500,000 a year to write a column for the Daily Mail and replaced him with Liz Truss, who brought in all of the economic policies that they'd spent decades dreaming of. They won again. They won. They kept winning. And then Liz Truss set fire to our economy. So the Conservative Party, and I think I might be the first person to have made this observation, and if I'm not, I apologise both for the inaccuracy and the pomposity. If I am the first person to have made this observation, I apologise only for the pomposity. The Conservative Party has been destroyed by success. The Conservative Party has been destroyed by success. It has won every battle on the political battlefields of the last decade. And the reason why it has been destroyed by its success is because the public have been able to see the consequences of those victories. It doesn't matter how complete your control of the narrative is, because you own all the newspapers and you've started setting up your own television stations and you've got your friendly, tame client radio hosts. It doesn't matter how complete your control of the narrative is. The public could see the reality of Brexit, of Boris Johnson's premiership, of austerity, and, of course, most obviously, of Liz Truss's economic policies. 4 abject victories. Win, 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 win. A party destroyed by its own success. So what does the right do next? It's a tricky one, right? What does the right do next? Having succeeded, having won all of these major political battles and yet destroyed its traditional party, what on earth do they do next? Well, I've told you a million times, they either admit the mistake, that you either sit behind this microphone and say, I obviously shouldn't have supported Brexit and I shouldn't have encouraged you to do so. I'm so sorry for treating Boris Johnson like some sort of political genius crossed with a comedy god. Obviously, I should have been calling out Liz Truss and the stink tanks that inspired her from years and years. I'm so sorry for that's your choice. Or you desperately search around for a receptacle into which you can put all of those disasters, which of course were also victories, and carry on pretending that you're on the right side of history. That's all you can do. You either put your hands up and apologise and resign and give up the editorship of the Daily Mail and go off and work with, I don't know, open a llama farm in Renfrewshire, or you desperately try to find a new receptacle that you have destroyed the Conservative Party by winning. Boris Johnson fans, Liz Truss fans, Brexit fans, austerity fans, you destroyed the Conservative Party by winning. And you removed all of the people from the Conservative Party who knew that you were destroying it. You got rid of that. You even got rid of Philip Hammond, the least threatening individual imaginable. You got rid of David Gawke and Dominic Grieve. You got rid of Rory Stewart. You couldn't find a home for Amber Rudd. You got rid of everybody, even vaguely competent or honest, and you were left with a choice between Kemi Badenoch and Robert Jenrick to lead the flipping thing. You destroyed the Tory party. So what do you do? It's one of those mornings where I felt the clouds clear. As a tireless student of right-wing lies and propaganda, I was, for a while, completely baffled by what happened this morning. But that's what you have to do. So you have to now take all of the chips that you have stolen back from the British public, having gambled them all on those four victories, Brexit, Boris Johnson, austerity, Liz Truss. You steal all the chips back, and you're desperately trying to find a new receptacle in which to put them that allows you to pretend that you haven't been so disastrously wrong about everything that you have destroyed one of the oldest and proudest right-wing political parties in the history of the world. The history of the world. I don't think that's a hyperbole. You have destroyed it by being idiots and often by being racist. You've destroyed it. So what are you looking for now? Well, we need another receptacle. We need something else to put all this stuff in. And up pops Nigel Farage. So what do? You spend the best part of a decade treating him like the second cup. Well, no, that's not true. You spend the first half of the decade treating him like the disgusting stain upon public discourse that he is. The unshiftable skid mark upon the underpants of British public life. And then, when you've destroyed your own party, you have to change your tune. You have no choice but to either apologise and resign and spend the rest of your life doing penance on a Scottish llama farm, or you pretend that this guy is the answer to all of the problems that you have literally created. So you invite him into the studios to sit where Boris Johnson used to sit, and you treat him like a good mate, and you go out for lunch and smoke cigars together, and you write articles for newspapers, or you commission him to write articles for newspapers. You roll out so many red carpets that my hometown of Kidderminster may yet reopen one of the factories that closed there during the 1980s. And that's what is happening. So you turn Nigel Farage into the receptacle into which you put all of the wrongheadedness, all of the racism, all of the disgusting ideas, all of the cruelty that destroyed your own Conservative Party by delivering Brexit, Boris Johnson, Liz Truss and austerity, and you set him up as the solution. And you call him patriotic and stick a flag in his pocket, despite the destruction that he has wreaked upon these islands, or the destruction that you have wreaked upon these islands by winning all the flipping time, by winning the referendum, by winning the elections, by winning this, by winning that, by getting your austerity in place, by getting Liz Truss into Downing Street, by getting your ludicrous economic policies actually enacted in a mini-budget. Win, 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 win. And then you end up with this guy, who you can't stop talking about. You can't stop inviting him on your programmes. You can't stop commissioning him to write articles. One bloke has even set up an entire television station as a sort of tribute act to Nigel Farage. And lo and behold, he ends up leading in the opinion polls. Well, colour me shocked. He's got the full weight of what used to be the right wing in this country before they destroyed itself by winning so many things. So they turn him into this ludicrous receptacle. And the only way they get away with it is by completely ignoring who and what he is. When The Sun described his racism in explicit terms 11 years ago, where were all the right-wing commentators complaining that he'd had a target painted on his back, or The Sun was obsessed with Nigel? When The Sun described his racism as racism in 2014, where were all the editorials asking, why is The Sun obsessed with this man? Why how dare they talk racism about a racist? It's incredible to see how far we've fallen in 11 years, but I hope you'd agree I've just made perfect sense of it all. So, we find ourselves this morning contemplating a right-wing media complaining that the Prime Minister is talking about and addressing a man who currently leads him in the opinion polls. And that is the moment at which I wondered whether the madness had become complete. I saw it in the Daily Telegraph, I saw it in the Daily Mail, I heard it on some radio programmes. You are complaining about the Prime Minister addressing the man who is currently leading them in the polls directly. Why are you even talking about him at all? By the way, I'll be back on my show taking calls tomorrow. But why are you even talking about this guy at all? It's just beyond bonkers, right? Why are they talking about him? He's leading in the opinion polls, and we report when he breaks wind, we stick it on our front pages and invite him into the studio to talk about it. We have developed an obsession with the man so complete that when he sneezes, we all catch a cold. But when the Prime Minister actually starts telling a few fairly mild home truths about the the bigotry and the division that he's sowing across this country, they all have a collective fit of the vapours. They clutch their pearls so hard, the twine snaps. And it is absolutely, well, hilarious, right? Why are you talking about Nigel Farage? Say, broadcasters and commentators who talk about him all the time, who can interview members of his organisation without asking about the bloke that's just pleaded guilty to taking bribes from a Kremlin stooge, who talk about him definitely not being racist or any of those things without mentioning the time he took that bloke out for lunch who'd just been thrown out of UKIP for being too racist and anti-Semitic. Photographed having lunch with Nigel Farage after he'd been expelled. So, I have got a question for you, but I should warn you that I think I know the answer. How can people who have treated Nigel Farage like the only story in town and indeed the second coming for the best part now of 2, 3, 4 years, how can they possibly complain about the Prime Minister calling out the leader of what is in the opinion polls the main opposition party in this country at the moment? I genuinely marvel at what we're witnessing, and I cannot wait to hear your explanation. So, I mean, pick a pundit, pick an editor, pick a commentator. Why are they so scared of Keir Starmer telling a few mild home truths about Nigel Farage? Nigel Farage, of course, the big fan of free speech, who now doesn't think the Prime Minister should have free speech in this country. He'll go and tell foreign politicians that we're turning into North Korea, and then he'll claim that the actual Prime Minister of this country shouldn't say accurate things about him, shouldn't tell the truth about him. And if you don't think that he indulges in racism, then don't take it up with me. Take it up with the Sun newspaper, which made that pretty clear 11 long years ago. So, why? Surely they'd be celebrating. And I think I know the answer, but I want to hear what you think first. I think it's similar to, why do racists hate being called racist? Why didn't people in this country embrace Steve Bannon's invitation to wear the accusation with pride? Why didn't that bit work? You can see it in the Lucy Connolly case. So there is a woman who actually and actively called for violence against entirely innocent people, foreign people, and said herself, if that makes me racist, so be it. So there's someone who wears their racism with pride. What do these people do with her? They turn her into a folk hero. They invite her onto the stage at their party conference and cheer her to the rafters. Someone who has pleaded guilty to inciting racial hatred, who called for entirely innocent human beings to be burned alive because they were foreign, who owned her racism, who said, if that makes me racist, so be it. That's the bit they love. That's the bit the Daily Telegraph commentators love. That's the bit Farage loves. The pride in being racist that they are too frightened to display. So what are they frightened of today? Why are they so spooked by Keir Starmer telling a few home truths about their golden boy? That's the question, all right? That's the phone-in. 0345 6060973. Why are these people so spooked by Keir Starmer telling a few home truths about Nigel Farage, who he hasn't even called racist? He's just pointed out the racism of some of his policies in the same way that The Sun pointed out the racism of some of his comments in 2014. So Keir Starmer has not gone any further in 2025 than The Sun newspaper went in 2014. That's an incredible moment to reflect upon. I'm mildly obsessed with it because it is such a helpful chronicler of our national decline. But why are they so freaked out? So spooked, so scared. Why is he even talking about Nigel Farage at all, who, by the way, will be back on my show next week? It is just, I don't want to say baffling, because I think we've made some sense of it. But why do you think they are so scared of Keir Starmer talking about Nigel Farage? Why is Nigel Farage, whiny little so-and-so that he indubitably is, why is he so scared of Keir Starmer pointing out his racism when The Sun was doing it 11 years ago? What are they so scared of? 0345 6060973. That's the question. What are they so scared of? Starmer isn't a brilliantly effective politician by any stretch of the imagination. He's not a brilliant orator. He didn't even go that far in his accusations. I personally would and have gone much further with all the evidence. What are they so scared of? From Farage right through all of his client journalists, all of his sycophantic propagandists and friendly journalists. What are they so scared of? What has Keir Starmer done that has spooked the horses so violently? Because I don't quite get it. 0345 6060 973. Hit the numbers now, you will get through.
LBC.
This is what award-winning customer service sounds like from real Octopus Energy calls.
Octopus are an absolute breath of fresh air.
The customer service is really good.
People like yourself and all of your colleagues have done such a wonderful job.
Your customer service was tip-top. You know, I couldn't fault it.
You stepped it up, I think, for an energy company, so well done.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running.
Play Set for Life from the National Lottery. Winners get 10K every month for 30 years. You could win on repeat. Set for Life. Play now on the National Lottery app. Terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Imagine a delicious patty nestled between two buns with cheese and ketchup. It's not a burger. That patty is actually sausage, which makes this a sandwich. A breakfast sausage sandwich. The new $1.99 sausage sandwich from McDonald's. Made with RSPCA assured pork. Until 11 a.m. Price and participation may vary. Upcharges and fees apply to delivery. Subject to availability.
For stunning retirement apartments to buy or rent, search McCarthy Stone or call 0800 153 3055.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
21 minutes after 10, a politician who has frequently engaged in racist rhetoric and is currently championing racist policies is leading the opinion polls in this country. So the serving Prime Minister took a little bit of the fight to him during his speech yesterday. At which point the right-wing media in this country has gone absolutely doolally. Even the Daily Mail, which of course brought you the front pages saying crush the saboteurs about elected MPs and enemies of the people about High Court judges, claims that yesterday Labour dragged politics into the gutter. And they are writing that article, or they are printing that front page, in defence of a man who continued to socialise with a well-known racist whose views at the time were too disgusting even to be accommodated within UKIP. They are writing that article, they're printing that front page in defence of Nigel Farage, who even the founder of UKIP described as unbearably racist and a frequent user of the N-word. What are they so... Why has the right-wing media gone so mad today, even by their own ludicrous standards? Hit the numbers now, you will get through. John's in Newport. John, what would you like to say?
Hi, James.
Hello, John.
I think the problem for Farage is that he, his arguments and his beliefs and the message that he's sending is so so based on like non-facts and things like that, that it's very fragile, which means that if, like, for instance, Labour have a kind of good week at conference, like I think they have, it doesn't take a lot to tip those beliefs and those messages that Farage is sending.
There's a fragility. I mean, these, of course, are the people who pretend to be the tough guys and the strong men and the free speech warriors, and yet they are whiny little creeps every time they open them. Whiny. Get Joe Brand arrested for doing jokes and then tell the American Congress that we're being turned into North Korea because a woman pleaded guilty to inciting racial hatred and quite rightly got sent to jail for it. The fragility is off the charts.
Yeah.
And I guess that might explain the brittleness this morning of responses to the Prime Minister saying things that are not as explicit as what the Sun newspaper was saying about the man in 2014.
No, and what Keir Starmer is saying is true.
Of course it's true.
So it holds substance to what he's saying.
But that doesn't explain why they're so scared.
It completely unbalances Farage's argument completely, yeah?
But why are they so scared of it?
Because, like you say, those polls especially because we're so far away from a general election.
Yes.
Like I say, it doesn't take much. It happened with UKIP, where they grew and grew and grew in popularity, and everyone, it sounded like lots of people were going to be back in UKIP and doing that, and then eventually when it came to kind of voting for them, nobody did.
And there's nowhere left now. So previously, when he was having his moments in the sun, the Conservative Party was always going to be there to to hoover up afterwards. And now, by winning so many battles, they have destroyed their own party. And that has left him as the only place they can go. He's the only maypole around which the right wing can dance in this country. And therefore, to be reminded of his racism, to be reminded, for example, of the time that he took this bloke out for lunch, a bloke who wrote, "The mass immigration of non-Europeans into every white country on earth has been engineered by a homogenous transatlantic political and financial elite to destroy the national identities and create a raceless new world order. These concerns were Jewish in origin. The promotion of world government can also be seen to be in line with traditional Jewish messianic thinking." Farage was taking him out for lunch after he'd been thrown out of UKIP. And if you're the editor of the Daily Mail, the last thing you want to see is that staring back at you from the mirror that Keir Starmer held up yesterday.
Yeah.
Well, I hope we haven't closed down the whole phone-in, because there's room for other answers to this question as well. Why are the free speech warriors so terrified of free speech? Why are the racists so terrified of being called racist? And why are the right-wing media so absolutely pant-wettingly scared of Keir Starmer telling a few home truths about Nigel Farage? 0345 6060 973. Robert's in Newcastle. Robert, what would you like to say?
Good morning, James. You okay?
I'm grand, thanks, Robert. How are you?
I'm good. I'm just running somewhere quiet because I'm taking a sneaky little call when I'm at work. But I think the thing with Farage is I'm from Newcastle and there's a lot of people that support them up here, and it's because I think the right-wing media are that scared because he's never been properly held to account like other MPs have. I know, like, when I'm feeling down and I want to see him held to account, I look at your brilliant interview you done with him a few years ago.
That's when the Sun called him racist. That's when the Sun went further than Keir Starmer went yesterday, and yet the Sun's stable mates, if you like, the rest of the right-wing media, are having conniptions on an extraordinary, on an apocalyptic scale.
Yeah, it's like the Emperor with no clothes, isn't it? They're terrified of him being exposed. He's been wrapped in bubble wrap. He's been protected. For like somebody that's got like four MPs, you don't even get doesn't get the coverage the Lib Dems do and stuff. And he's basically the golden boy. They've invested that much newsprint.
And that's the missing piece of the jigsaw. I only spotted it today, is that there's nowhere else to go.
There's not, no. What do they do? Claim
it's him or Kemi Badenoch. It's him or Kemi Badenoch. That's it.
She's spent four, so they've attached everything to him. But I just hope that it happens, because there's been... Starmer's made a lot of mistakes, communicating and stuff, trying to out-reform. You can't do that. The more he goes right, he'll just go more right. So he's got... I think this is, like... Just call it what it is, you know. So he said some appalling stuff, and that's not even getting into the amount of times he's been on Russian TV and stuff.
No, of course not. And I still haven't heard him accounting for the bribes that his close friend and colleague Nathan Gill took from a Kremlin stooge in order to pollute public discourse in the European Parliament, after which he was made leader of Reform UK in Wales, of course.
Yeah, I know. And this is what's so great about your show. Wow. People from all walks of life can get educated on what's happening, because he's on every programme, you know what I mean?
And never asked about any of this stuff. I haven't even heard him account for why he lied about his house in Clacton, claiming that he bought a house exchange contract, and then turned around later and said, "Oops-a-daisy, I accidentally didn't buy a house. It was my girlfriend who was so poor a few years ago, she had to take work as a waitress, but has now got £800,000 knocking around with which to buy a house with a swimming pool in Frinton-on-Sea." But anyway, let's talk about Angela Rayner.
Yeah, Angela Rayner. See, all guns blazing about Angela Rayner, but whenever there's a little bit of scrutiny turned on him, he just folds, and that's why he'd be a disaster if he ever got in.
And it is the whiny little
whiny little whatever element of it all that is so extraordinary. These people claiming to be the masters and mistresses of free speech, the great defenders of our liberties, the tough guys who can stand up for what they believe, and at the first sign of trouble, yeah, they run for nanny, they call for their mum. And, of course, they want the freedom of speech of the actual Prime Minister to be curtailed. It's coming up to 10:30. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. More answers, please, to the question of why exactly are people who have spent years treating Nigel Farage like the Second Coming so spooked by the sight and the sound of the Prime Minister telling a few home truths about the man? It is absolutely extraordinary, right? How do you account for it? Here's Thomas Watts with your headlines.
Sir Keir Starmer has told LBC that he'd like to see his former deputy, Angela Rayner, back in frontline politics. She was forced to step down last month in a row over the stamp duty paid on a flat she bought near Brighton. Treasury officials are said to be looking at a way to lift the two-child benefit cap in Rachel Reeves' budget. The Chancellor hasn't denied the reports, but says she won't commit to policies without explaining where the money's coming from. A murder investigation is underway after the death of an 85-year-old man who'd been attacked in hospital. Andrew Farmer was injured at Charing Cross Hospital in Hammersmith earlier this month and died a week later. LBC weather, sunny spells for many places, but cloudy with some heavy rain in the north. A high of 19 degrees.
This is LBC.
Have you done any jobs since I was away?
It's been 10 years. People change.
We're going to steal a painting from the biggest gallery in Spain.
You've only been out 2 minutes.
If your daughter rocks up, what are you going to offer her? Half a dozen eggs or the chance to be set for life?
But first we have to gather the team.
Starring Saran Jones.
That mouth got you in trouble before, has it?
Yeah, it's yours.
And Jodie Whittaker.
We come up with a plan and we execute it.
Some friendships are criminal. New drama, Frauds, starts Sunday the 5th of October on ITV1 and ITVX.
Skiing isn't just a holiday.
It's a feeling you can't forget.
It's scenery that makes you say wow.
Before your first run of the day.
It's the clinking of our free drinks.
And trying something totally new.
Paragliding, anyone?
We get it.
We know the feeling.
Get that feeling with Crystal Ski Holidays.
Choose from over 150 resorts and get everything sorted in one easy package. Find out more at crystalski.co.uk. ABTA and ATO protected.
At Aldi, we're delighted to tell you that we've regained our crown. Yes, we've won which cheapest supermarket for August, beating our competitors, even with their loyalty card prices. Just goes to show you're on to a winner when you shop at Aldi. Visit aldi.co.uk/awards for more.
The advert looked genuine. A post from a household name, experts in money, a hot opportunity. They asked for a small amount, promised a great return, took all I had, and then disappeared. Investment scammers are highly sophisticated, and every month, CEL talk to thousands of people like you who've fallen victim. Our experts can help recover your money, so head to celsolicitors.co.uk today.
Tell CEL.
Brands that use radio are 49% more likely to get noticed. Amplify your advertising at radiocentre.org. Assuming you want to get noticed.
Leading Britain's conversation, LBC, with James O'Brien.
10:32 is the time, and you could be forgiven for thinking that you'd woken up in a parallel universe where the right-wing media in this country is desperate that we don't talk about Nigel Farage, having talked about little else pretty much since the last general election. The minute Keir Starmer got into Downing Street, the Telegraph, the Mail, the Express and their broadcasting equivalents suddenly turned feral. Suddenly the small boats crisis that Boris Johnson had created became the only story in town. Suddenly it was absolutely paramount to stop them, despite the fact that their political champions had failed completely to solve the problem that they had created. And today, after Keir Starmer offered some very mild and entirely accurate criticism of Farage and his fellow travellers, they're calling him obsessed, they're claiming he shouldn't talk about him at all, they're wondering why he mentioned him as many as, count them, 4 or 5 times in a 52-minute speech. I mean, gosh, that's almost once every 10 minutes. And he'll be back on my show taking calls tomorrow. I just don't get it, except as time passes, I think I actually do. Anyway, would you like to hear some of the speech, just in case you missed it the first time round? I may reserve the right to pause it and offer a little bit of commentary if we have the technological capabilities to scale such radio Everests.
There is a line, a moral line, and it isn't just Farage who crosses it. There are also people who should know better, sowing fear and discord across our country. And
okay. That's part of the reason why they're getting so spooked, because he's talking about them. If you were pretending earlier this week that Starmer had said that Farage or Farage's supporters were racist rather than simply the policy, in the same way that The Sun in 2014 said that Farage's words were racist but didn't suggest for a minute that all of his followers were, he's actually calling you out, isn't he? He's calling out the commentators and the columnists who soft soap this character and don't actually hold his feet to the fire or even tell the truth about what he has actually said. Okay, can we go back to the beginning? I want you to listen to that again, because it's not just Farage. That's it. That's why they're all so scared. He's just held up a mirror and they've seen themselves goggle-eyed, staring back.
There is a line, a moral line, and it isn't just Farage who crosses it. There are also people who should know better, sowing fear and discord across our country. And then when we call it out, they pretend that we're criticising reasonable concerns about immigration. We have seen that trick conference.
We have seen that trick. And it's not just Farage, it's the Mail. You name the people that have done that this very week that have lied. They have lied and lied and lied again and claimed that any illustration of how bigoted Nigel Farage is a claim that all of his followers are racist, or that anybody concerned about immigration, and how couldn't you be after the effort put into distracting you from the damage done to the country by the Tories by telling you to blame it all on foreigners over the last few years? How could you not be concerned about immigration? And they lie that if you are concerned about immigration, then Keir Starmer thinks you're a racist. Play a little more.
So let us spell it out once and for all. Controlling migration is a reasonable goal. But if you throw bricks and smash up private property, that's not legitimate. That is thuggery. Thank you, Compton. Free speech. Free speech. Free speech is a British value and we have guarded it for centuries. But if you incite racist violence and hatred, that is not expressing concern. It's criminal. And Mr.
So Lucy Connolly, who incited racial hatred and in a context where racist violence was highly likely to unfold, pleaded guilty and said, if this makes me a racist, then so be it, gets soft-soaped on the actual stage at the Reform UK conference. And Keir Starmer says that, and Nigel Farage claims that he has had some sort of target painted on his back by Keir Starmer. So here's a woman who incites racial hatred and embraces her own self-professed racism. Let's invite her onto the stage and call her a political prisoner and give her a big hug for the cameras afterwards. Here is a man explaining why incitement to racist violence and hatred is wrong, and he's been accused of endangering Nigel Farage by Nigel Farage in his latest Wineathon. This is why the right-wing media has gone so mad. Listen, don't get your hopes up. Just because you can see the truth today doesn't mean anything's going to get better. They'll just double down, triple down, quadruple down on it. You've got the Daily Mail claiming that Labour has dragged politics into the gutter. We are in the upside down, and there ain't no getting out of it anytime soon. But my goodness me, the way in which they don't realise how transparent their panic is now of pretty much waking up and realising that they've got into bed with a man who is, by most accounts, by all accounts, pretty disgusting. Or they've got into bed with a woman who is a racist by her own admission and who incites racist violence proudly and pleads guilty to it and gets turned into some sort of folk hero by the Daily Telegraph and others. And that is why they're so spooked this morning, because he's not just talking about Farage, he's talking about them.
And this party, this great party, is proud of our flags. Yet if they're painted alongside graffiti telling a Chinese takeaway owner to go home, that's not pride, that's racism. And conference. If you say or imply The people cannot be English or British because of the colour of their skin. That mixed heritage families owe you an explanation. The people who've lived here for generations, raised their children here, built their lives here, working in our schools, our hospitals, running businesses, are our neighbours. If you say they should now be deported, then mark my words, we will fight you with everything we have, because you are the enemy of national renewal.
And there it is. So, I mean, we've done some pretty good work this morning at establishing why certain elements of the media, remember the winners, the ones that actually got what they wanted with the referendum, with Boris Johnson, with Liz Truss, with austerity, with all the rest of it. They won so often that they destroyed the Conservative Party that they worshipped. Why are they so terrified of what Keir Starmer has just said? And the answer is he's not just talking about Farage, he's talking about them. So when you hear some bloviating buffoon complaining about Keir Starmer talking about Nigel Farage, what they're really saying is, God, stop it, will you? This is all getting a bit close to home. I'm very much one of the people who has encouraged the idea that you can't be English if you're brown. I mean, if I've never actually said it out loud myself, I've certainly invited people to write for my newspaper or onto my television show or my radio show. I'm one of the people who has helped to create that hideous vista that Keir Starmer just described. I am literally one of the facilitators of the hatred and division that he's talking about. So, of course, I just want him to shut up. And I'll pretend to think he's obsessed with, I don't know, Nigel Farage or something. Just shut up about all the racisms. Shut up about all the free passes that we've given to people possessed of these hideous opinions. Please, whatever you do, don't point out that there's a direct correlation between the public discourse that we dictate and the violence that is being inflicted upon ethnic minorities. Or the graffiti. Please don't do that. Because then I might actually have to develop, might be a little bit too much to hope for a backbone, but I might actually have to develop a conscience. Teresa is in Rochester. What are they so scared of, Teresa?
You've, as usual, James, hit the nail on the head. The truth hurts, doesn't it?
I think it does.
What Keir Starmer has done is called out all of this stuff for what it is. Look, we've got people here painting roundabouts badly, putting flags up to intimidate their neighbour, daubing go home on the local fish and chip shop that's been there with an Asian family for 30 years, all in the name of trying to make things better. And what Keir did yesterday was say, this is what you're doing. You are fighting your own neighbours. You're fighting the people that you live with. You might be fighting the people that you're married to or your brother's married to. It's not acceptable, and we won't put up with it in the Labour Party or anywhere else. He was absolutely right to do that. And for all of the people who are supporting reform, what the bigwigs and the right-wing media are scared of is that actually that thin veneer will float back to us in the Labour Party, float back to the Tories, because people won't be comfortable with what's been said. So I'm really proud of Keir Starmer.
It's a bit Basil Fawlty, isn't it? It's a bit don't mention the war, and except it's the racism. Don't mention the racism, because then our full-throated and sycophantic support for this man will make us look bad and feel bad. Mm. And also, our own families will probably turn against us when they realise what it is that we're facilitating. So, another piece of the jigsaw you've just brought to the table. Yeah. This is aimed at people who didn't listen to the speech.
Absolutely. And you can see it on social media yourself, like I can. The Farage fanboys coming out every day, saying daft things about Keir Starmer. Never quite saying how much they love Nigel Farage, because, of course, that makes them into kind of forelock tuggers and bootlickers. But that's what the truth is. This guy is a fraud. One minute he's the bloke down the pub, the next minute, just in the last few weeks, I've heard him say he's an entrepreneur, an industrialist. He knows how to run business, and that's wrong with the government. It's got the absence of people like him. Actually, this is the guy who, in most normal situations, would be standing in the corner of the school playground with no one to talk to because he's an awful bloke. That's who he really is. And the way that things have gone, because we've been through a rough time, because austerity has crushed an awful lot of people, and then Liz Truss crush them a bit more. He's on a rise of things that, as you said earlier, and other people have said we've seen before, blaming somebody else for the stuff that's making you miserable. And in his case, he's picked on people who are black and brown. There's no doubt about that. And crossed a line by talking about people who've got indefinite leave to remain. One of the things that's never said, James, is that if you've got indefinite leave to remain, you might have had that for 40 years and worked as a care worker, as the woman who looks after my 96-year-old mum does. She's never actually had the money to apply for British citizenship. It costs a lot of money.
Sure.
And that is never said. So people, just as the Windrush people did, exist in our country with indefinite leave to remain because they can't actually afford to pay the Home Office nearly 10,000 quid, which is what actually is the reality of it all.
And paying a premium in the meanwhile to access the NHS services that these people claim that they're getting for free.
And suddenly Farage mentioned those people, the people that we know, the people that anyone who's been saying they love Farage actually knows. And it's hurt. And good. I'm really proud of Keir Starmer for doing that because it needed saying. In the Labour Party, we'll never be the establishment. We have to fight the establishment. We know that. That's okay. I don't want to be the establishment. I do want to be the honest politicians who are on people's side, trying and often succeeding to make things better.
I think the establishment best understood in this context as simply wealth, really.
Yeah. And you are one of the very few people who recognise the importance of the British press. You know, people say, oh, it doesn't really matter. Nobody reads newspapers anymore. It matters every single day. Those headlines scream out of you from a newsstand, a screen, from the mouths of somebody in the canteen who's reading The Sun. It does matter. And
look at what they've delivered. I mean, they've won everything. This is the bit that it sounds a bit weird to say, I take myself by surprise. But when you suddenly realise that the Tory party has been destroyed by a decade of victories. It got destroyed by a decade of victories, and they've got nowhere left to go except this character.
It's when you said that made me phone, because I think that's what's happened to the right-wing press.
Yes.
The Tories have faded away, and they don't know what to do, so they've put their weight behind Farage, and actually they've come unstuck, because it will turn people off. Farage turns people off. He certainly turns me off. He's a repellent person. But when it comes down to brass tacks, this isn't the kind of place where people really think like that. Yes, we get fed up.
Sure.
Yes, you know, we call things out. Yes, we say that all politicians are rubbish. I hear that every single day. But in the end, actually, there's a basic tolerance and decency that defines the UK. And we saw it in the Raw yesterday, and that's a good thing.
And I guess it went better than anybody could have expected from that point of view, which is why so much of today's coverage is hinging upon the knowledge that most people won't have seen it. So you misrepresent it. If you're getting your image of what happened in Conference Hall yesterday from the front page of the Daily Mail, then you are getting a completely skewed account. And of course, Theresa is right. They might now sell a tiny fraction of what they used to sell in their heyday, but they still define public discourse. I have tried and not succeeded, but I will never stop trying to steer a slightly different course. But how can you when almost all broadcast media, including the BBC, has elements of its agenda set by these hideous rags and their blatant lies and their provocations and their incitements? I mean, the enemies of the people for high court judges. Crush the saboteurs for elected MPs, and now they dare to suggest that Labour has dragged politics into the gutter by accusing Nigel Farage of not liking the country that he has damaged while considering Vladimir Putin to be the most admirable politician on the planet, who's gone to an American Congress committee and compared us to North Korea, while lionising and championing a woman who admits to being racist while inciting racial hatred in the dock of one of our courts. But the Daily Mail think that Keir Starmer is the problem? That's genuinely extraordinary. Some breaking news for you. the firm linked, a firm linked to Baroness Moan, put in the House of Lords, of course, by, I think, David Cameron, breached a £122 million government contract by supplying unsterile personal protective equipment during the COVID pandemic, and a judge has ruled that they must pay £122 million. I you know what my brain's like. I've got stuff filed away in it that is not always entirely helpful, but I don't think there's any money left in that business. PPE MedPro. So I don't know what that means. I don't know what happens if a business that hasn't got any money left is given a fine of £122 million. Do you go after? I don't know, but we'll find out a little bit more shortly. It is 10:49. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. In fact, we'll find out a little bit more now, will we? No, shortly. 10:49 is the time. I think we've nailed it today. And I say it again. I've said it before and I'll say it again. Don't get your hopes up. Just because Starmer has hit this one out of the park doesn't mean that anything's going to change, as the front page of your newspapers today will prove. It's 10:49.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
I would think of, in recent times, one prime ministerial conference speech in the last 15 years that has had a demonstrable effect on the fundamentals of that person's time as prime minister. That conference speech I'm thinking of is one I know well because I was there behind the scenes at the time. 2017, when in Theresa May's speech she coughed her way through it and the signs fell down and all that madness. That changed the fundamentals of the prime minister and probably meant she spent 6 months less in office than she otherwise would have done had that conference speech gone well. So these things don't change the fundamentals very much. What they're designed to do is to change the tone and the feeling. And I do think Keir Starmer achieved that.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on your radio, on Global Player and the LBC app.
That quiet moment behind the wheel. The perfect space to get your thoughts in order. With the stylish HRV Hybrid, you get the head-turning design you want with the space and flexibility you actually need. Because every journey matters. Explore the full Honda range online at honda.co.uk. Honda, the power of dreams.
Welcome on board this LNER service from London King's Cross to Edinburgh. My name's Paul, your train manager today, and hang on, is that a Scrabble tournament in coach here? Yes, G with an X is a word. Right, we're cruising at 125 miles per hour, same speed this lad next to me is typing. Someone's on a roll! The cafe bar's in coach G if you fancy a brew, or if you're mid-box set binge, just order through the QR code at your seat. We'll deliver it. So sit back and enjoy your journey. With LNER, it's freedom all the way.
Stayshore. What is Stayshore? Stayshore is not just the UK's favourite travel insurance. Stayshore is the confidence that comes with knowing that you're covered by the company with more five-star reviews on Trustpilot than any other provider. A company that welcomes people of all ages with pre-existing medical conditions for single or multiple trips. So Stayshore with Stayshore Travel Insurance. UK's favourite relates to number of five-star Trustpilot reviews, T's and C's and verifications at stayshore.co.uk/reviews.
Get them class ready with Samsung. Upgrade to the epic Galaxy S25 Ultra and get a free 14-inch Galaxy Chromebook Go worth £399. A laptop for study and streaming and a Galaxy AI-powered smartphone that effortlessly manages your everyday tasks. It's genius, really. Buy before the 2nd of October 2025 from a participating retailer. Claim from Samsung within 30 days of purchase. T's and C's apply.
This year, Amazon are increasing the electric delivery vehicles we use across Europe to 10,000. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where babies are made a fuss of. Where we deliver footballs for kids' kickabouts. And where they deliver the football straight into next door's garden. Can they have their ball back, please? We're delivering change where it matters, on your doorstep. Delivery service partner vehicles across the UK and EU.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Go on then, let's dissect this front page. The day Labour dragged politics into the gutter. This from the newspaper that brought you enemies of the people to describe High Court judges doing some High Court judging. Crush the saboteurs to describe elected MPs doing some elected MPing. And, I mean, one of their columnists, I think, has the dubious honour of being the only newspaper columnist ever to be cited by a coroner at the inquest into the suicide of somebody that he'd attacked in print. That honour belongs to Richard Littlejohn. So, you know, if it wasn't in the gutter already, then your guess is as good as mine. So let's look at the three accusations, OK? These are the three accusations. Desperate Starmer accuses Nigel Farage of not liking Britain.
Oh! He said I didn't like Britain.
I mean, the great annals of political accusations, you don't like Britain, it doesn't get into the top 200, does it?
He said I didn't like Britain.
Well, how could anybody who likes Britain praise Vladimir Putin, for example? How could anybody who likes Britain turn it into the first country in the history of humanity to impose economic sanctions on itself? But anyway, that is the crime of which the Daily Mail, of which Keir Starmer stands accused this morning by the Daily Mail. Desperate Starmer accused, they've even got it on a red background. You don't like Britain. The next bit, then Lammy claims reform leader flirted with Hitler Youth before being forced to apologise. That's not exactly what happened, lads, is it? What actually happened was that a teacher at his school described him as shouting Hitler Youth songs as he marched through local villages while in the combined cadet force, and he later denied it. Would you like to hear the words of his denial that the Daily Mail is holding up as somehow embarrassing for David Lammy? "Of course I said some ridiculous things," said Nigel Farage. "Not necessarily racist things." I mean, who here has to atone for their past commentary by suggesting that it might not actually have been racist? Spoiler alert, it was. But he has been allowed to deny his own teacher's testimony that he sang Hitler Youth songs while marching through villages near his public school. So that is also the terrible thing they have done. David Lammy repeats accusations made by a woman who was actually a teacher at the school where Nigel Farage attended, but Nigel Farage has subsequently denied it by claiming that he didn't necessarily say racist things, and therefore David Lammy withdrew, I would say quite gallantly withdrew his comment. He didn't have to. He could have just said, well, you know, I believe the teacher. Why would she lie? Why would she lie? And then the third thing, Farage responds by accusing PM of inciting the radical left and says he's no longer fit to hold office. So anyway, here, coming onto the conference stage at the Reform UK conference, is a woman who actually pleaded guilty to inciting racial hatred and did it because, by her own account, she's a racist. I actually encourage people to set fire to homes full of completely innocent humans. But by saying that he doesn't like Britain, Farage somehow concludes that Keir Starmer is inciting the radical left. I'm now going to list all of the members, the prominent members of the radical left in this country. Are you ready? I have to be a little bit careful because the emergency tape will kick in if I stay silent for too long. All right, so that's all the members of the radical left, which is an organisation, of course, headed up by... Okay, so but that's not working very well. He also mentioned Antifa, a sort of imported phrase from America. So now let's list all of the well-known activists and occupants of the space described by Nigel Farage as Antifa, all right? Let's start with all the famous ones. Well, this is all very odd because the Daily Mail is supposed to be a newspaper. How can it just print this nonsense without backing any of it up? I'll leave you to wonder. Zach's in Liverpool. Zach, what would you like to say?
Hi, James.
Hello, Zach.
I just wanted to say my analysis of the situations that the right-wing papers have been benefiting, their interests have been benefiting from normalising these racist ideas for quite some time. And that's why we've got to the point where Lucy Connolly and, you know, all the other stuff that you mentioned. But what's important about Keir Starmer's speech, and I think why they've reacted to it so violently, is that it has power. He's not going to allow that normalisation to happen anymore, and that's what the speech meant. I wasn't in the conference hall, but I have been at the conference, and I was actually quite moved by the speech. I didn't realise I felt that strongly.
Goosebumpy, wasn't it, that bit that we played out a moment ago?
Yeah, I am. I actually ended the speech. I was in tears. I emotionally sort of broke down at the end of it. And there was this really nice lady that was like, you know, are you okay? And I was just like, I'm really glad that they're going to fight back against this stuff. And I think that's, you know, the Prime Minister being on the stage saying that he's calling them what it is, that it means the gloves are coming off now, finally.
And they can't stop whining. It's extraordinary how whiny they are, especially Farage. He's so whiny. And Vladimir Putin put North Korean troops on the ground in Ukraine, of course. And he remains, I presume, Nigel Farage's favourite politician, although he may have been usurped by Donald Trump. And yet he will go to a foreign committee hearing and slag off his own country by comparing it to North Korea. And in the same breath, or in the next week, call for the Prime Minister's freedom of speech to be curtailed. It's just, the more you pick at it, the more hideous and ridiculous it all becomes.
There's one other thing to say about why it has power. So the speech really tapped into a sense of Britishness that was about tolerance and about, you know, it was rooted in our history of standing up against these ideas. And I think that's what they really don't like. It's not just that they've been held, they've had a mirror held up to them. It's that that mirror shows them not to be, you know, to be outside patriotism. And I think that they realise that that has power.
I think you're right. And can you name any prominent members of the radical left while I have you here, Zach?
I'm not sure.
Or even Antifa? Let's have a little listen. Let's have a little listen to the whiny little so-and-so whining like a whiny little so-and-so.
Labour says these policies are racist and immoral. And by implication, Reform supporters, Reform voters, Reform sympathisers are racist too. Yes, if you think we should control our borders, you are, by the definition of the Prime Minister and his cabinet, all racists. Now, I don't normally worry about abuse being thrown at me. I've got kind of used to it over the course of the last few years. But to accuse countless millions of being racist is a very, very low blow. Why? Well, this language would incite and encourage the radical left. I'm thinking of Antifa and other organisations like that. It directly threatens the safety of our elected officials and our campaigners. And frankly, in the wake of the Charlie Kirk murder, I think this is an absolute disgrace.
And now please welcome to the stage at the Reform UK conference a woman who was actually jailed for calling for completely innocent people to be burned alive in their beds, which she did by her own account because she's a racist. I mean, the whiny little liar has excelled himself there, hasn't he? Because Keir Starmer categorically did the opposite of what Farage has just accused him of. In fact, it was a little anecdote about a lady in Oldham that played directly into the opposite end of the pitch from where Nigel Farage has just pretended that Keir Starmer sits. That's another reason why they're so spooked. That's odd, actually. I hadn't listened to that clip so closely before, but he's really, you can hear that wobble in his voice. Not because he's frightened of a non-existent organisation that he calls Antifa, or because of anything that might be loosely described as the radical left, or because Charlie Kirk was murdered in the United States of America by somebody whose political motivations have not even been close to established. He sounded like he needed a glass of water, didn't he, during that? But I'll play you the clip of the lady in Oldham shortly, and we may continue our inquiry into what he is so scared of. I thought he was supposed to be the big free speech man, and he's scared of Keir Starmer pointing out that he doesn't like Britain, and that, as The Sun said in 2014, he has a very odd habit of saying very racist things.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, a company linked to the Conservative PM, Michelle Mohn, has been told it must repay the government more than £120 million. A High Court judge has ruled PPE MedPro breached a contract during the coronavirus pandemic. LBC's Fraser Knight has more details.
PPE MedPro has been given until the 15th of October to pay £122 million back to the government after the judge ruled that the contract agreed during the pandemic had been breached because the surgical gowns didn't meet the expected standards. The company yesterday, though, filed a notice to appoint an administrator.
Baroness Mohn has accused the government of making her and her husband scapegoats for the PPE scandal. The Prime Minister has promised to look at how British courts apply human rights law on asylum cases. Sir Keir Starmer's described the dinghies crossing the English Channel as Farage boats because of the effect of Brexit. He says the Reform leader was wrong to say leaving the EU would make no difference to migration policy. Sir Keir's also told LBC he would like to see Angela Rayner return to frontline politics in the future.
She made a mistake. She's paid a heavy price.
Indeed.
And I've always thought that she will be a major voice again in the Labour movement.
Okay.
And I think that is a good thing. And I've been really struck, actually, since she did step down by the number of people from different political walks of life who say to me they do want to see Angela Rayner have that voice again.
Angela Rayner stepped down last month in a row over the stamp duty paid on a flat in Hove. An 85-year-old man's died a week after being attacked in hospital in West London. Andrew Farmer was injured at Charing Cross Hospital in Hammersmith last month. A 70-year-old man, who has been charged with GBH, is due to appear at Isleworth Crown Court later this month. Hundreds of thousands of federal workers are being told to stay at home because of a US government shutdown. Federal funding was cut off at midnight after senators failed to pass a last-minute spending bill. And the Met Office has issued weather warnings for the first named storm of the season. Storm Amy is expected to bring very strong winds and heavy rain to northern and western parts of the UK from Friday. Wind speeds could reach 80 miles per hour in places. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was up 62 at 94.12. The pound buys $1.34 and a euro 14. LBC weather, sunny spells for many places, but cloudy with heavy rain further north. A high of 19 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Angela Rippon, what are you doing here?
I've come to tell you about using energy flexibly, Albert.
Flexibly?
Yes, smart meter owners could get rewarded for moving their energy use, like doing the laundry at off-peak times.
So I don't need to do the splits?
No, Albert, nobody wants to see that.
Get rewarded for using energy flexibly, only with a smart meter. Search Get a Smart Meter today.
Eligibility and availability vary. Consumer action required. Reward schemes and tariffs available to selected customers from selected suppliers.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Five minutes after 11, still reeling at this front page. In a further sign that Labour risks importing the toxic political culture of the United States, they write in a piece defending Nigel Farage, who just talked absolute gibberish about Antifa and the radical left, phrases that are absolutely intrinsic to the toxic political culture in the United States, describing Antifa as an organisation, which is great because they'll be able to give us an address, won't they, and the name of the leader, or at least a few members. It's an organisation, remember. I mean, and who here isn't passionately opposed to people who are passionately opposed to fascists? In fact, if you are anti-fascist, what are you? If only there was some easy way to work that out. But I'll tell you, for nothing, there is no organisation. And equally, there is no rationale or justification for printing the following. Deputy Prime Minister David Lammy made a poisonous claim that Mr Farage had flirted with the Hitler Youth, which he was forced to withdraw. Shall I rewrite that for the Daily Mail this morning? Deputy Prime Minister David Lammy repeated a well-documented claim by one of Mr Farage's former teachers at the £40,000-a-year Dulwich College in South London that he shouted Hitler Youth songs while marching through a quiet Sussex village very late at night. Nigel Farage has subsequently denied this claim, but admitted to saying some ridiculous things that were not necessarily racist. Feels a bit different, that, doesn't it, lads? If you were to stick that on your front page, it would land a little bit differently with your credulous readership. But there we are. And then lies about Antifa and the radical left. Or, unless you can send me a list of all the members. Do you think he means me? And what do they mean when they talk about the radical left? Hey, Owen Jones couldn't even get into the Labour Party conference yesterday, which seems to me to be a very big mistake by the party organisers. But who's the radical left if they are Keir Starmer's foot soldiers? Where are they? I don't know. And the other bit, the bit that's really interesting, and this is where the whiny little liar's lies really get exposed, because he's claiming that Keir Starmer is calling all of the people in this country who are, quotes, concerned about immigration racists, which is a lie you can only sustain if you completely ignore what Keir Starmer has actually said and what he specifically and explicitly said on the conference stage yesterday.
Controlling migration is a reasonable goal. But if you throw bricks and smash up private property, that's not legitimate. That is thuggery. Thank you, Compton. Free speech. Free speech. Free speech is a British value and we have guarded it for centuries. But if you incite racist violence and hatred, that is not expressing concern, it's criminal. And Mr.
So that's where we are on free speech, and here is where we are on the claim that he is calling everybody who's concerned about immigration racist.
Now, soon after I became an MP, I went to Oldham for a by-election up there. I was taken to a street to meet a woman who I was told had strong views on immigration. I knocked on the door. She invited me in. We had a cup of tea and a rich tea biscuit. And then, as we sat there, she got her photo album out and showed me pictures of her at the wedding of her Asian neighbour. She was proud that she was her neighbour and her friend. Now, I'm not the most patient person, as anybody in my family will tell you. But I started thinking, what is going on here? And then we finally got to it. She told me that a group of men from Eastern Europe had recently moved into her street. They sat on her wall, didn't put their rubbish out at the right time, and spat on the ground. To her, that broke the little but important rules of her street. She didn't like it. Then I realised what was really happening. And conference, what was really happening is that she, an ordinary working class woman from Oldham, a Labour voter, felt that she had to prove to a Labour politician that she wasn't racist before she could even bring up the issues in her community. I've carried that with me through all the bad years, conference. Whatever our intentions, we had become a party that patronised working people. And that is why we changed the party.
So there he is, explicitly distinguishing between racism and immigration concerns. And just before that, you heard Nigel Farage explicitly lying that he had done the opposite. And the words are there. The conference speech happened on live television. Some people are even in Liverpool watching it. And yet Nigel Farage's lies go largely unchallenged by the supine sycophantic media. It isn't normal, right? And it does increasingly have echoes of the United States of America, because those phrases, this organisation, Antifa, can someone tell me how do you join Antifa if it's an organisation, unless the whiny little liar is lying again? How do you join this organisation? Who's in it, for example? Because I can name someone who's been sent to jail for inciting racial hatred. I saw her recently on stage at the Reform UK conference being treated as a folk hero. But these people that Nigel Farage is describing, where are they? And shouldn't somebody explain to them, if they exist, that Keir Starmer said on stage the polar opposite of what Nigel Farage is claiming while bleating victimhood, while whining about victimhood? If he's genuinely worried, then the worst thing he could do is to misrepresent the man that he's claiming to be scared of. Why would you lie if it's going to increase the threat that is posed to you, unless you're also lying about the threat that's posed to you? Hey, I'm just asking questions. But that was Keir Starmer doing the thing that he is very keen to do. And some people don't like it on his side of politics. Some people don't like it. That woman in Oldham didn't like the behaviour of the people on her street. It was not their nationality that was the problem, as was proved by the fact that she had attended her Asian neighbour's wedding. Nigel Farage wants to deport that neighbour, potentially. And yet Keir Starmer is the threat. And according to the Daily Mail today, Keir Starmer has dragged politics into the gutter alongside the man who lunches with virulent anti-Semites, whose views are too vile even to be accommodated within UKIP, who promotes to senior leadership positions a man subsequently found to have been accepting bribes from a Kremlin stooge. What possibly could have attracted Nathan Gill to a party led by a man who describes Vladimir Putin as the most admirable politician on the planet? I'm just asking questions. And what possesses right-wing commentators, columnists, editors, TV hosts, radio presenters to ignore all of this? To fail even to ask questions when you have chairmen and senior members of the party sitting in front of you in a studio about how he could have accidentally claimed to have bought a house that he didn't buy? Or how his girlfriend could have suddenly ended up with £800,000 knocking about when previously she'd told journalists that she was working as a waitress because she was close to bankrupt? I don't know. I'm just asking questions. I'm just asking questions. And our biggest question of all, I think, is why don't more people ask the same questions? I do not know. I'm looking at a story involving one of the MPs who is, I don't know what the state of play is with the party that Jeremy Corbyn and Zara Sultana were in the process of launching relatively recently. And I'm not being sarky or snide. I genuinely don't know what's going on over there. But I do know that there's an MP in Blackburn who has just said that he has deleted a picture of his newborn baby daughter from social media as a consequence of vile racist abuse. I read in the Daily Telegraph, of all places, this morning about a local authority removing a large number of flags from a seafront park after a man was punched to the ground in a racist attack. The victim was verbally abused by a group of men described as white and carrying flags before being attacked at Canoe Lake on South Sea Seafront earlier this week. Police said the suspects were carrying flags, and subsequently the council has received complaints about the flags in Canoe Lake. I received an email over the weekend from a prominent person of colour describing some of the conversations they've been having recently, and I have not for the first time been told by a very prominent Muslim friend or acquaintance, somebody in public life who I've met as a consequence of my job, that they are genuinely thinking of moving overseas. So let's park the conversation about whether racists are racist or whether racism is racist and have a conversation instead about how it actually impacts upon normal people, like the neighbour, perhaps, of that lady in Oldham, who Keir Starmer talked about as a way of demonstrating the difference between being a racist and having concerns about immigration, in a speech about which Nigel Farage has subsequently chosen to lie. But let's not talk about that anymore. Let's talk about how it's actually affecting you, how the mood with regard to race is changing. I, in some ways, I wouldn't mind hitting 12 o'clock today without having taken a single call, if you see what I mean. I'd probably be able to fill the space available with my own meanderings. But I'm looking at that story about the MP in Blackburn, and I'm thinking, yeah, but, you know, maybe that's just Twitter. The real world's not like that. And then I'm reading the story about the park in Portsmouth, and I'm thinking, well, I hope that's an isolated incident. And anyway, that could have happened at any point. It's not just because everyone's been going around putting up these cheap, tacky nylon flags on streets and parks and lampposts. That doesn't necessarily prove that racism is on the rise. But I'm white. Nothing I can do about that. I'm white. I'm never going to experience it, except, you know, a Billy Bunch of numbers on social media with a bulldog avatar who has never felt more empowered to be vile than before. But how does that reach you? I mean, I think the mood has changed. And the only reason I want to be wrong is because I don't want to be living in a country where racism is getting reintroduced to mainstream discourse. You know, as Starmer pointed out yesterday, the people who are saying you can't be British if you're brown, or you can't be English if you're brown, that's just gross. And it's the kind of rhetoric I used to get in my inbox when I started working here. And I felt it was so fringe, it was barely worth reading out. Now it's mainstream. Now you get a column in the Telegraph or the Spectator making these kind of arguments. Now, to be fair, you could always get a column in the Spectator making those kinds of arguments. But I don't think you'd have got a column in the Telegraph in my late father's day. So tell me, what makes you certain or fearful, but currently not certain, that it's getting worse, racism is getting worse in this country? And we'll leave the politics out of it, okay? The fact that you have prominent public figures engaging regularly in racism and being defended by organisations like the Daily Mail is probably part of the story, but that's the bit that we covered next. That's the bit that we covered in the last hour. I just want you to tell me why you think it's getting worse. 034, and I wonder if we can get a rough calendar. I don't think there's a pivotal moment. Brexit was huge for bringing racism back into the mainstream because people voted to get other people out of the country. They were too thick to realise that was never really on the table and that anyone who did leave as a consequence of Brexit would be leaving voluntarily. But that's what they voted for, to get rid of people like you. Well, not you. I don't mean you, but, you know, the other ones, the ones I read about in the Daily Mail. So that was a big moment. I don't think there's been another big moment in the last few years, like an actual pivot, an actual date on a calendar where the pendulum swung or the seesaw rose. But I could be wrong because I'm white. I don't feel it. I don't feel it. So what makes you fear it's getting worse? 03456060973. And what and where can we track it to? Hit the numbers now, you will get through. It's 20 past 11.
This is LBC.
Amazon offers term time working to their employees, like Anton, who's home to look after his daughters during their holidays.
Hello!
To him, this is the best sound in the world. Actually, maybe that's the best sound of all. Now that's term time working. Offered at Amazon. 10 weeks off guaranteed per year. Mix of paid holiday and unpaid time off. Conditions apply.
I'd been in the family home for 30 years, but it was different. Too many rooms, too few voices. Moving to McCarthy Stone felt like a big step, but this place is full of life. I chat to someone every day. In the lounge, in the garden, even in the lift. I have my own apartment, but I'm never truly alone. I only wish I'd done it sooner.
Discover stunning retirement apartments exclusively for the over 55. Search McCarthy Stone or call 0800 153 3055. Age restrictions and qualifying criteria apply.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 6060973.
21 minutes after 11. I'm not going to tell you who this email is from, but I am going to tell you that you almost certainly know them, okay? I haven't cleared it with them, so I'm going to cloak it in anonymity. But I'm going to be doubly careful. I'm not even going to tell you whether it's a man or a woman. I'm simply going to tell you that they're black. And this is one paragraph from quite a long message that I received at the weekend. I've had conversations over the past few weeks with friends and family, as well as with black and brown people who have stopped me on the streets, on the tube, and on trains, and told me of their plans to leave the country, of their fears for themselves and their children, and about us suddenly being back in the 1980s. I've never heard so much fear and sadness from so many people. I sat in a television studio. This is back to me now. That's the end of that email, that anonymous message that I received this weekend from a very, very well-known person. I sat in a television makeup room a couple of years ago now and was told by a very prominent Muslim politician that they were, for the first time ever, actually thinking of upping sticks and leaving because it turns out that they were a bit of a canary down the coal mine. They had a feeling that things were getting very nasty. And their rationale for that, as somebody whose politics is very different from mine historically, but their rationale for that was that the failures of those four massive victories were going to have to be pinned on someone. And it's highly unlikely that the people who told you to vote for Brexit, for Boris Johnson, that Liz Truss's budget was brilliant and that austerity was the correct response to the global financial crisis, it's highly unlikely that any of them are going to step up anytime soon and take the responsibility for the consequences with which we all live today. So who's going to get the blame? Who is going to become the scapegoat for the often incoherent unhappiness that has in many cases been caused by the direct consequences of those political victories for the right wing in this country. And their feeling was, as a right wing politician, that skin colour would play a large part in that process. And at the time, I didn't just hope they were wrong, I thought they were wrong. I thought they were, and I thought, well, I can't say that because that's white privilege, but I think that's a bit of an overreaction. I don't think that now. I don't think that now. Lena is in Epsom to kick things off. Lena, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. Thank you for bringing up the subject. I was just thinking about it the other day. I was just talking to your producer that I've literally just got my house valued to see what our options are. I haven't experienced anything direct.
Right.
But then I'm not sure if it's always been there. And it's now everyone's, the mask has completely just fallen off.
Well, why do you say that, though? I mean, if you haven't experienced anything direct, can I...
I don't know. Basically, literally the other day, I was crossing the road as a pedestrian, and this guy just, I don't remember, it was a massive car.
Yeah.
And they were shouting at me for not looking where I was going. And I was like, well, you've just come into the road. I don't know if this was just random.
Sure.
But then the moment I just spoke, like, you know, pedestrians have right of way or something, you know, like that, or they're like, then they basically didn't say anything. And then I said, oh, you didn't expect me to talk back. And I think those kind of occasions have happened, but then I don't think that's now, but I feel as if it's... I'm also become a lot more paranoid, though, James, as well.
Well, I don't want you to be paranoid, but I can't tell you not to be, because, you know, the temperature has been turned up, it feels, right? Temperature has been turned up.
And it's really bad on social media. At work, some of my colleagues, we talk about it openly.
Yeah.
And some of them are like, I was up on the, that riot, you know, that protest. I can't even remember the one in London.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm for it. And then some of us had to sit down with, and explain, because like we see a lot of, asylum seekers who come into our, into the NHS.
Mm.
And we were saying, look, you know, these people who live in these hotels, they don't get half of these things that they're telling us on the, you know, in social media and the newspapers. Some of them only get like £2 a week to live on, a whole family. And they've got massive malnutrition problems. They've got mental health problems. And this one nurse, she was talking, I'm glad she joined into the conversation. She said, yeah, I work in a church group and we go and volunteer there. So, you know, like there may be one or two people getting these silly things like mobile phones or whatever, but it's not all
from charities, not from the government.
Yeah. I don't even know where they're from because I see it. Yeah, because I see it, and I've seen it over years. Happened to work in Croydon where...
Someone told me when I started this job, I hadn't had much exposure to what you'd call mainstream racism, but I got a bit of a crash course. And I remember a caller telling me that immigrants were given free shops.
See what?
Shops.
Shops?
Actual shops. I'm glad I've made you laugh. If you were an immigrant, you could get a shop. They'd give you a shop.
Oh, gosh. Do you know...
And that's before Facebook went nuts. Go on.
My husband works three jobs, right?
Yeah.
And he volunteers and he teaches, right? We are one, you know, the Henry Group. You know, you mentioned once that we're rich, but not we're poor.
Yeah.
Right? That's where we are. Okay, because living in Epsom, you have to be.
And just that sense. I mean, I want to reassure you, and I feel it would be irresponsible of me not to try... That things, but I can't change the way that you feel. And I mean, certainly it can't be a coincidence that this racist attack in Portsmouth was committed by people who were in the business of putting up flags or who were carrying around a large number of flags. I think for many, those flags are designed to make others feel unwelcome.
I actually don't have a problem with the flags.
Some of the people putting them up are doing it for fairly obviously unpleasant reasons.
Yeah. And I just feel like, look, we're all part of this country. We're all, you know, I know people, if someone saw me down the street, they'd think that I don't know a word of English and I don't know where I even, I know, somehow
well, I
talked to, you know.
I wouldn't think
no. But I'm just saying that, you know, because of the way I dress and that's it.
Sure.
But otherwise, you know, everything else, you know, I'm third generation immigrant or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah. British,
and
English,
I have not British yet. I don't have anywhere to go. So that is the other problem. Like, you know, to have up sticks and sell the house and, like, I've still got one in secondary. Yeah. Like, where do, and I was like, okay, if he comes into power, if reform comes into power, I've got still until 2028 or 2029. And all of these things are going through my mind. Like, in that time, do we have time to sell up? But where do we go?
And that's where class...
Then I become an asylum seeker.
I don't know, actually. I mean, I know it's a rhetorical question, but I don't know. And the fact that you feel like that has happened quite quickly. I said that I didn't know that there was a pivotal moment, but of course there was. I forgot that. And it does, I'm afraid, take us back into the last hour. It was the riots, wasn't it? It was the riots after that dreadful murder in Southport when the racist liars on social media started spreading racist lies and people joined in who should have known better. Actually, that's not true. People joined in who don't know better or do know better but choose to act in that hideous way. And the next thing you know, you've got the Farage riots raging in various towns and cities. Hey, look after yourself. And if it can happen quickly, it can unhappen quickly as well. And it could be that that process started yesterday in Liverpool. It could be. But again, I'm not going to be directly exposed to racial hatred as a consequence of my skin colour. I'm not going to be very popular with the people who are going to racially abuse other people because of their skin colour, but that's not the same thing, not by a million miles. And that's why I worry it might sound glib when I say that you can undo things almost as quickly as you can do them as a nation, as a population. It's coming up to 11:30. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Thomas Watts is here now with your headlines.
A company linked to the Conservative peer Michelle Mohn has been found to have breached a pandemic contract. PPE MedPro has been ordered to repay more than £120 million by a High Court judge. The Energy Secretary, Ed Miliband, has promised to ban fracking in his speech to Labour's conference in Liverpool. He joined other ministers in attacking Reform UK, describing the party as a bunch of ideological extremists. A man who faked his own death in an attempt to escape justice after raping two women has been jailed for 8 years. James Clatcher was traced in Spain after fleeing Scotland during his trial in 2022. LBC weather, sunny spells for many places, cloudy with heavy rain in northern areas, a high of 19 degrees.
This is LBC.
When BP asked me to read the voiceover for their new Wild Bean Cafe ad, I thought I knew what to expect. But when they told me I'd be reading the script next to a mountain waterfall, on horseback, strumming a harp, in a hailstorm, naked, ow, 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 ow. Well, that was wildly unexpected. Just like Wild Bean Cafe having a freshly ground signature espresso blend for everything from Americanos to flat whites in a fuel station. Wowzers. Wild Bean Cafe, only at BP. Subject to availability at selected BP stores only.
Amazon has increased funding for employees to £3,000 a year every year for career development. Like Juliet, she's now a trained technician. And to her, the sound of machinery in need of repair reminds her of how far she's come. In 2 years, she's landed her dream job, providing her with valuable skills. That's up to £3,000 every year for career development at Amazon. Eligibility conditions apply.
Imagine a delicious patty nestled between two buns with cheese and ketchup. It's not a burger. That patty is actually sausage, which makes this a sandwich. A breakfast sausage sandwich. The new £1.99 sausage sandwich from McDonald's. Made with RSPCA assured pork. Until 11 a.m. Price and participation may vary. Upcharges and fees apply to delivery. Subject to availability.
Calling all black cab drivers. Let's talk about those quieter times when your meter's taking a little nap. Why not consider Uber? We can give your meter a wake-up call. Join close to 1,000 black cab drivers already on Uber and gain access to millions of passengers at the touch of a button. Black cabs on Uber are priced by your meter, and the service fee will be no more than 5% until the end of 2025. Turn downtime into prime time. Go to uber.com/blackcabs to start earning today. Terms and conditions apply.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
11:32 is the time, and I guess part of the answer to the question we posed in the first hour is answered by some of the people contributing to this hour. Why has the right-wing media had such an extraordinary hissy fit over Keir Starmer's very mild criticism of Nigel Farage? Answer, because they know that they are responsible for the change in public mood. They know that by lionising Farage, you create an environment in which he can trust the word of the alleged rapist Andrew Tate over that of the British authorities, and as a consequence of that, quite possibly prompt people to take to the streets to express violent racism. They know that they're complicit in those processes. Whether or not he is responsible for that, I don't know. I'm just asking questions. But that is why they've gone so nuts, because Starmer, as Prime Minister, held up a mirror yesterday, and the Daily Mail and various other fellow travellers really hated what they saw. They really hated what they saw. So what they do, even Farage hated what he saw. What they do when they hate what they see in the mirror is either try to cancel the person holding up the mirror or break the mirror. And it often works, which is how you end up with Donald Trump back in the White House. There you go. That's the end of my TED talk. Back to the changing mood in this country and the experiences that I, as a middle class, middle-aged white bloke, am unlikely ever to endure. Samaila is in Nelson in Lancashire. Samaila, what would you like to say?
Oh, I was just talking to your producer. Hello, James.
Hello.
I'm a little bit nervous and I've got a sore throat, so please bear with me.
It's only me. I can't do much about your sore throat, but there's nothing to be nervous about.
I know. I've spoken to you before as well on the same matter, and I was just saying to your producer that I kind of despair. I don't have any other word. I feel so sad because my granddad came here in the 60s, and my uncles and my mum would tell me, also my dad, what used to happen back then. And it's like it comes in waves. Like, it feels like it's okay. And then it feels like everything's just going down the drain again. I was telling your producer that my biggest worry is for my son. Like, I've seen this, and I really, really, when I was younger.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry I'm getting upset.
Hey, don't apologise. Don't apologise to me. Take all the time you want, all right? All the time.
When I was younger, I used to see these things and I'd say, it will get better, I'll be better, I pick good people to be friends with, and I've got an amazing, diverse friendship group.
Yes.
And I was going to meet a friend of mine in a small town nearby that is completely drowning in flags.
Right.
And I was going to go and see her because we're going to a concert together in Manchester at the end of this month.
Oh, yeah.
And my friend is white, and I'm going with her mum and her sister, who are also white. I'm not white. Mm. And I parked in my car, and I walked maybe 50 yards up to where I was supposed to be. And in that time, a group of men walked past me and told me to go back to where I came from. And I just said, I'm only down the road. I'm meeting a friend for coffee, and I'll be gone in a bit. Don't worry about it. This was last Saturday.
And before that, when would you have feared that that kind of thing might happen? Do you see what I mean? I'm just trying to work out, this dial has been turned up over a relatively short period of time.
This happens quite often. I wear a kefir quite a bit.
Yeah.
I'm pro-Palestine, so I get told to go back there quite a bit. I'm not from there.
Sure.
I just don't support a genocide, so I get told to go back quite a bit. I think, like I'm saying, it comes in waves, James.
When wouldn't it have happened? When would it last not? When would you last have walked down that street and it wouldn't have crossed your mind that that was likely to happen, even if you were wearing a scarf that is associated with the Palestinian people?
I don't know how to explain this to you, but it's not a fear. I'm not afraid of someone coming and saying something to me, because I will give back.
Clearly.
Just as well as I get.
Yeah.
And I'm not scared of anyone saying anything. I despair for the situation for the future. That's where the upset is.
Mm.
That my granddad came here in the 60s, and we're now in 2025, and it's the same disgusting rhetoric, and it's the same kind of people. And where's humanity going? Where's the progression? Where's the moving forward? Where's the coming together? Where is it? I heard a lot of it when Trump got elected the first time. I actually got told, you better pack up, you're going back. I don't know what him being elected had to do with me going back, but there was a vibe through the whole country. I got told the same thing when the George Floyd thing happened. That incident made a lot of people, divided people a lot. Trump's second election, during Brexit. There's so many incidents that have happened.
And this is why you talk of waves, and it goes up and down. Yeah. Why are you more worried now about this one not coming down than you have been about previous ones?
My son is now 17.
Right.
I was talking to a friend of mine, and I was saying to her that sometimes I feel like there'll be camps like they were in America where they put the Japanese in the camps. And I feel like if people get the wrong people get in power, that will be us. And my friend said, we will never let that happen. We'll be out in the streets. Well, we're out in the streets now for a ceasefire. We're out in the streets now asking people not to be murdered and children not to be starved. No one cares. So I don't understand how going in the streets will save me and my son. That's one thing. The other thing is that quite often when we go out, and I'm so sorry, this is crazy. It's probably because I'm not well.
Of course, it is. Your immune system's a bit compromised or something. Hey, you're doing great. And I'm going to reassure you.
People quite a bit because I'm really proud of him. He's been brought up in two different cultures and he's balancing them both really well. He's going to be 17 in January. His GCSE results are fantastic. He went to a grammar school, got in on an unconditional offer. He's an explorer scout. He's going to lead his own group soon. He's a qualified scuba diver. He's going to do marine biology. He's going to do research that helps develop medicines. Don't know how he's going to do it, but that's what he says.
Blimey.
He's a poet. He nationally tours with a group of poets.
Good Lord.
I'm talking about bringing up a superstar.
You've done something.
But when we're
right.
walking down the street together,
yeah.
no one sees that. People call him the P word quite openly.
Really?
And quite confidently. And I'm
when
and
did that start?
Worthy.
When did that start happening again?
It's always happened.
Well, all
it's
his
always
life.
Been there. Yeah, it's always, it doesn't happen like every day. We don't get it, but it's always there. I can't explain it to you.
No, you don't have to. I'm feeling what you're describing to me. I don't need it explaining.
I went maybe 15 years ago with a friend of mine on training to a college for some union training. And we were sitting in the foyer just having a cup of coffee. And she kept on staring at me and saying, shaking her head and saying, why are you not angry? And I said, what are you talking about? And she said, everyone comes in and does a double take like you don't belong. And I said, because I don't know any different. I don't know what it is not to be looked at and gone, well, you kind of don't belong here, but we're not going to say anything. And there's so many people that carry that look. I don't want to take away from the brilliant people. It's not many people that do that. There are so many fantastic people around that just don't have that. This country is not full of racists and it's not full of hatred.
No, I
agree. But when you have people that lead and they give people that window, people that are, I'm going to say, mentally unwell.
That's genius.
Because racism is like an illness.
Yeah.
I think those people just think, we've got someone to look up to now. This is our person. He looks like us. She looks like us. She makes the same sounds that we want to make.
He's saying the things
we're following
that
this person.
Or he's not quite saying them, but we know that he agrees with us in private.
Yeah. Yeah. And if I was speaking to another friend of mine who I said, this whole thing about these flags and everything, she said, do you know what? I used to go get my nails done such a place. I don't go there anymore because of the conversations that happen. I've got another friend who's changed a hairdresser because of the conversations that happen in that place. And you can only confront people so much until you just start becoming labelled a troublemaker.
Bullshit. The conversations that you overhear are crucial, aren't they? That's another piece of the jigsaw that I've missed.
Yeah, and these are the allies.
So it's not abuse that's directed at you. It's a conversation that you're overhearing.
It's just a conversation. Yeah. So sitting there getting your nails done and saying to someone, listen, you can't say that. My friend's Pakistani.
Yeah.
Her kid's Pakistani and he's awesome and you can't say that. Well, I'm obviously not talking about her. I'm talking about the benefit scroungers and the job thieves and the people that are stealing the jobs and not working.
Yeah.
I'm talking about those. I'm not talking about your friend. Obviously, she's different.
And that's how it works, isn't it?
And that is how it works.
You don't have any power.
That's why I feel so sad, because I've listed my son's
I know you have. Are there
amazing
any more? Are there any more? So I've got the scuba diving, I've got the poetry, I've got the GCSEs, I've got the marine biology. Come on, let's stick a couple more on the list.
Explorer Scout Leader.
There we go. He's about to start his own troop. And we don't see that when he walks down the street.
No, people don't see that. People do not see that when he's walking down the street. And that makes me really sad because... And I also understand that going forward in life, the colour of his skin will stop him from taking so many opportunities. His dream is to go to the Florida Institute of Biology, I think it is, something like that. I can't remember what it is. And I fear for him. I think, all right, you know, it's all right to go now. But that fills me with dread that he wants to go to a country where he might be mistaken for a Mexican and put in handcuffs and taken away.
And I wish on that point that I could push back a bit or reassure you a bit, but I can't because that is
But you happening. Do, James, though, because what you do is you bring these conversations to the forefront nationally, internationally, and they need to happen. People need to be comfortable with these conversations. People need to be able to say to me, listen, this is what I think, this is how I feel, what is this?
Yeah.
And we need to have these conversations without fearing repercussions, but they can only happen in a safe environment where everyone feels safe. And if you've got someone waving a flag in your face telling you to go back home, that's my flag as well, you know.
Of course it is. And I think Starmer made that. I mean, they did make that point yesterday at conference, didn't they? Some people a little uncomfortable with the sort of flag-waving antics, but I think that's the point they were making, was that it's your flag too. It's my flag, it's your flag, it's all of our flag.
A few months ago, one of your questions was like, what to be nationally proud of and having a Britain Day. And I think this is part of it, because we don't have a day where everyone can just let off fireworks and do a yee-haw kind of thing. People find these kinds of opportunities.
That's a bit American, mate. You can't be doing yee-haws. We'll do a jolly good, jolly good.
Jolly good, jolly good, pip-pip cheery or whatever you want to do. Yeah. If people had a day like that where they could go out and buy their flags and decorate their houses, they might not feel so much
anger. Do it on St. George's Day. Sadiq Khan always lays on a big shindig in Trafalgar Square on St. George's Day, but you're right. I mean, we might do it for a royal wedding or something, but
yeah,
we don't do
exactly.
it on
exactly. But if everyone had a day where they could just go out and just let off some steam because they're British, I think they might feel a bit better about themselves.
Have a little dance with their neighbour.
I honestly do believe that people that behave like that are mentally ill and quite broken inside, and there's a lot missing from their lives, because there's so much power in multiculturalism and diverse friendship groups. Like, my friends are amazing, and they come from all nationalities and all races and all walks of life, and that's what's enriched my son's life and made him the way he is. Because he just accepts everyone and absorbs everything. And he says things to me, for example, we were talking about Palestine and Israel, and I said something, I can't remember, about Jewish. And he said, you can't say that, you know, there's a distinction between Zionism and Judaism. And I went, I am aware of that, I just said it. And he said, yeah, but little words make a big difference, Mum. And that comes from living with people that are all different from him.
Yeah.
And not staying in your own little group and being a complete psycho that uses flags to hurt people. That's not what the flag is about. You're actually disrespecting your own flag by behaving this way.
Of course you are. Of course you are.
Sorry, I'll get off the soapbox now.
How's your throat?
Feels better for
sure. Give my love to your boy. All right, I mean
Thank
that.
Thank you so much, James.
I don't say that. I don't expect to... be in your family conversations just because you phoned my radio show, but I mean it today. I really want you to pass on my absolute best. Thank you, Samaila. 11:46 is the time. Speaking of Judaism, as Samaila just referred to, here's a little line from Michael Crick's biography of Nigel Farage. One Jewish pupil claimed Farage would sidle up to him and say, Hitler was right, or gas him. Another claimed Farage had a preoccupation with his initials, NF, as they were the same as those of the National Front. He was a deeply unembarrassed racist, said David Edmonds, who was in the same class as Farage when they were about 15. I wonder if he's a member of Antifa. Can we find out? Maybe that's... I mean, it's extraordinary that since he was 15, people have been calling him racist. And yet when Keir Starmer doesn't call him racist, the whiny little liar is claiming all sorts of nonsenses will ensue. It's 11:47.
LBC, this morning, on Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
52 minutes and counting, that was how long the Prime Minister's speech ran for yesterday, and after which I was afforded the opportunity to have a sit-down interview with the Prime Minister.
Minutes after you put your speech, Nigel Farage came up, as you're probably aware, and claimed you had an obsession with him. How concerned are you that he says some of your comments could have put him at risk?
No, that's not the case.
Well, what I am... Respectfully, that's what Mr. Farage says, Prime Minister.
Well, he says a lot of things that I don't agree with. I am concerned to make the argument, and I will, on behalf of the country that I love. I am deeply concerned about reform because I think they will toxically divide our country and rip it apart.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on your radio, on Global Player, and the LBC app.
Fraud can happen faster than you think. But at Barclays, we use innovative technology that spots fraud in under a second. And our dedicated team of experts work 24/7. So you can go about your day knowing we never stop working to keep you and your money safe. Search Barclays Fraud Protection to see how you can stay one step ahead. Barclays, make money work for you.
Play Set for Life from the National Lottery. Winners get 10K every month for 30 years. You could win on repeat. Set for Life. Play now on the National Lottery app. Terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Stayshore. What is Stayshore? Stayshore is not just the UK's favourite travel insurance. Stayshore is the confidence that comes with knowing that you're covered by the company with more five-star reviews on Trustpilot than any other provider. A company that welcomes people of all ages with pre-existing medical conditions for single or multiple trips. So Stayshore with Stayshore Travel Insurance. UK's favourite relates to number of five-star Trustpilot reviews, T's and C's and verifications at stayshore.co.uk/reviews.
How will you react if you win big with Win Plus?
I can't believe it!
Enter now at winplus.co.uk to get in the draw. 18 plus GB only, T's and C's apply.
For GCSE and A-level success, one name stands out. Justin Craig. Small, tailored group tuition that really works. Justin Craig courses consolidate knowledge, boost confidence and improve technique for mocks, assessments and exams. Available in classrooms and online. One-to-one also available. With over 40 years experience, Justin Craig has helped more than 100,000 students. For more details, visit justincraig.ac.uk. Justin Craig. Tailored for you.
Get them class ready with Samsung. Upgrade to the epic Galaxy S25 Ultra and get a free 14-inch Galaxy Chromebook Go worth £399. A laptop for study and streaming and a Galaxy AI-powered smartphone that effortlessly manages your everyday tasks. It's genius, really. Buy before the 2nd of October 2025 from a participating retailer. Claim from Samsung within 30 days of purchase. T's and C's apply.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Not quite shy. A lot of love for Samaila coming in, and as you would expect. Not many, only one that I can find, applicant for Idiot's Corner. And I'm a little wary now of that phrase after what Samaila suggested about the mental health of racists. But anyway, I'll read this from Simon, and you can draw your own conclusions. Some actress you have just put up for digestion there, James. Also, any of those you stated earlier that don't want to hang around as we slowly achieve our agenda for change, tell them to shut the door on the way out. So those people are out there. Just a little surprising, perhaps, that they're still listening to this programme. 11:51 is the time. Back to the changing mood, the changing face of Britain, the consequences, if you like, of allowing racist liars into, not just into the public space, but rolling out the red carpet for them everywhere from the Daily Mail, arguably, to this very room. Jen's in Manchester. Jen, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. Yeah, I've just listened to the previous caller, and it honestly broke my heart, especially as a mother of a daughter who I share. Me as a black woman, has a partner who is white, and we have a daughter, and she's asking me a lot of questions about flags and the sudden influx of them. And me wanting to be honest with my daughter about, you know, age appropriate.
Yes.
I also don't want to lie. And I remember vividly when I was younger having these conversations with my own parents who are of Jamaican and Caribbean descent, being told that there's, you know, sometimes their experiences of racism growing up in the 60s in Manchester and having us in the 80s and it feeling very much like we're going back to that. And this is kind of my first real experience where it's so overt and so in your face. And it's, especially as a mother, is really worrying about what my daughter could be hearing, what she thinks of that, how that makes her feel.
Conversations that perhaps you didn't previously feel you'd ever need to have.
Not so soon. I felt I probably would have had to have that conversation because, just for context, she's 6 years old.
Sure.
But I feel like it has slowly been coming up and cropping up. I think definitely since George Floyd in 2020,
yeah,
it felt like it did feel very much like there was a shift. And some of my personal friends were being very silent. And that really opened my eyes up. Especially with so many people, it felt like all of a sudden, and I'm happy, there was so much support for family and all the posting of black squares on social media.
But the fury that was generated by people taking the knee was extraordinary, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. And it just made my world feel that bit smaller. It really did.
Because it was, it was either a rejection of the existence of racism or, hand in hand with that, a kind of tacit endorsement of racism. This is an obviously racist event, the killing of George Floyd, that was, you couldn't wriggle out of it because people were pointing cameras at the police officer who murdered him. And to express recognition of institutional racism on both sides of the Atlantic really, really upset the racists. Do you know, they even suspended someone from GBBs for taking the knee in the studio. I bumped into him the other day. Literally that angry about people expressing opposition to racism that you could be removed from a television studio for it.
It's unbelievable.
It is unbelievable.
It saddens me. And then the need, like you said, had there been no cameras that day, could it have just been brushed under the carpet? And then it felt like, because things are so much more visible now in this information age, it's like you have to have that as some kind of assurance that it's happened, because no one will believe you that you're playing the race card. It couldn't be that, gaslighting on an actual industrial scale.
And it doesn't matter, because even with the footage, the propaganda machine goes into overdrive, and the arguments that because George Floyd's record wasn't squeaky clean, he somehow deserved to die, or that it's pointless to mourn his passing. All right, it was a result of a racist murder, but something spin. It's an extraordinary exercise in self-exoneration from people who aren't quite ready, and hopefully never will be quite ready, to say that they don't care that someone got killed for being black.
It feels very much that it feels like that if you have a black or brown body, that even in death they are still looking for fault, that it could be, it could have just been that it they had it coming, or they brought it on themselves.
Gosh.
But that it doesn't feel is afforded to someone who isn't that we're supposed to feel, uplift them, celebrate them for what happened, but not the same suspicion seems to come readily, it feels. And it makes me feel, growing up and seeing all of this, that you do feel less than. And I think now, in today's Britain, especially when we have got marches happening in London, just allowed to happen, and knowing that the same technology wasn't used in facial recognition in these exact riots that wasn't used in Notting Hill for some reason, speaks volumes. It really does feel like we're never, ever going to get out of this. It feels like it has always been happening. It's just that when you've got people, heads of state figures, saying it with their full chest, no repercussions. It wasn't that long ago we had a Prime Minister who was describing people
with letter as letter boxes and picking any smiles. That's what it. And there was no. It was just left. No, not much was. He just and he was upheld. It was fine. He was kept in power. It really feels.
I'm not. He did that long before he became prime minister. So I just for the record, I think it's important to be clear on that. I think if he'd said that as prime minister, the response would have been very, very different. But of course, it didn't stop people tickling his toes on a regular basis, or the Daily Mail from hiring him as a columnist subsequently.
Yeah, it doesn't. It feels like there's not the same. It feels like it's allowed.
And that's what's changed, actually, as an observer and a chronicler, but never a victim or a target of this very specific type of hatred. That's what's changed, in that even if people were gnashing their teeth as they did it, they wouldn't have gone along with it. They wouldn't have said, these are decent people doing this thing, or they wouldn't have ignored the violent racists and focused on the people who were claiming not to be racist when they're on a march or when they're protesting. You wouldn't have ever had a serial criminal inviting thousands and thousands of people onto the streets of this country without a latter-day Cable Street response, you know. Well, you say that, you don't go back far enough. The Daily Mail's got hurrah for the black shirts on its front pages, so it's always cyclical. I hesitate to ask you this question. What gives you hope?
It's really hard to feel hopeful.
That's why I hesitated. That's why I hesitated to ask.
It really does, because I fear when I'm out with my daughter on my own, just walking out and about, just going about our daily lives, I have felt so much more acutely aware of my surroundings and looking to figure out, okay, if this happens, what do I do then? Yeah. How do I explain that to my child? And the sudden influx in my little town where I live, all of the flags that have just gone up, and a few neighbours of mine have suddenly had a flag go up, and I've had no conversation about it. It's just been quite a shock, really.
I mean, clearly, people have put flags up who are not trying to frighten you or trying to make you feel unwelcome or trying to contribute to an atmosphere of hatred. But you can't tell when you look at a flag what was in the heart of the people that put it up. You don't know whether it is somebody who is celebrating the English women's rugby victory, or whether it is somebody like the group of, quotes, white men carrying flags, end quotes, who punched a man to the ground in Portsmouth a couple of days ago in a racist attack. Don't know. And that means that if I was thinking of putting a flag up and I knew that you existed, or I knew that Samila was living on the next street, or I knew that all of the people who've told me how those flags make them feel were living in my community, I just wouldn't put it up. That's all. Out of decency and kindness, I just wouldn't put it up. I wasn't going to put it up for any negative reasons, but knowing that some people have, and how that makes you feel, means that as a fellow citizen, I wouldn't do it. I just wouldn't do it.
This is the sad thing, is I wouldn't dream of telling someone what they can and cannot do
on
their own property. I would never do that. But it's heartbreaking.
Yes, it is.
It's really heartbreaking, because
there's more of us than them, Jen. There's more of us than them. I promise you.
Yeah.
I promise you.
It's heartbreaking, because I'm trying to keep it together and not make a big thing out of it for the sake of my child, who plays with other children in my area, and as far as she's concerned, the world is great. And I really, really wish that was true.
Yeah, I wish I could say something a little bit more reassuring than numbers. Yeah. I really do. But here we are.
Yeah.
Here we are. And we have to talk about it. And thank you for helping me shine a light into this issue.
I really do appreciate that you have brought it up, because, like Samila said before, we need to have discourse about it. Otherwise, we're just going to be in this cycle.
And I wonder whether that takes us back to the first hour and the confusion at these people going, why are you so obsessed with Nigel Farage? Why are you doing it? And the answer is because we're flipping terrified of what happens when racists feel emboldened by public figures. And if you're one of the people that has been red carpeting that public figure, no wonder. No wonder you want to attack Keir Starmer for pointing out the unpleasantness of much of what Nigel Farage has done and much of what he stands for. And, of course, are you all right, Jen?
I am fine.
Are you sure?
Yes, I am.
Go and have a cup of tea.
Yes.
that's what brings us all together, the great uniter. And, of course, on the subject of promoting violence or inciting violence or saying things about politicians that are unacceptable, which party do you think a councillor who recently wrote, "I'd shoot Starmer myself," belongs to? Who do you think his leader is? There it is. "I'd shoot Starmer myself." I'll give you a clue. He's a whiny little liar.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midday, a firm linked to the Conservative PM, Michelle Mohn, has been told it has to repay more than £120 million to the taxpayer. The High Court has ruled PPE MedPro breached a contract for supplying protective gowns during the pandemic. LBC's Joseph Draper has more.
This consortium, PPE MedPro, was led by her husband, Doug Barrowman. He was given that contract, would have benefited potentially from millions of pounds in profit. As I say, now that money's now all got to be paid back. The question now is how that money will be paid back. I've been taking a look at the company accounts for this year, showing they've only got around £600,000 of assets.
Baroness Mohn has described the judgment as the result of an establishment cover-up. The Energy Secretary, Ed Miliband, has announced plans to ban fracking. He's told Labour's conference in Liverpool that drilling for gas and oil from shale rock is dangerous and deeply harmful to the environment. Mr Miliband also attacked Reform UK, warning it would trash the UK's climate commitments. A man who faked his own death in an attempt to escape justice after raping two women has been jailed for 8 years. James Clatcher, who is 57, was traced to Spain after fleeing Scotland during his trial in 2022. Both attacks took place in the victims' homes after they met on dating apps. An 85-year-old man's died after he was allegedly assaulted by a fellow hospital patient. Andrew Farmer was injured at Charing Cross Hospital in West London last month and died a week later. LBC's reporter Helen Hoddin Not has more.
Officers were called to reports of a patient being assaulted by another patient at Charing Cross Hospital on Thursday the 18th of September. And they arrested a 70-year-old man, Anatoly Podmazkov, of no fixed address, at the scene shortly after. Mr. Podmazkov has been charged with grievous bodily harm and will next appear in court in a week's time.
And parts of the UK are set to be battered by strong winds and rain from Friday. The Met Office has issued weather warnings for the arrival of Storm Amy, the first named storm of the season. Wind speeds of up to 80 miles per hour are possible. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was at 94.14. That's up 63. The pound buys $1.34 and a euro 14. LBC weather, many places seeing some sunny spells, but cloudier with heavy rain in northern areas. A high of 19 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Looking for a fixed passive income backed by real demand? With ulezprosperity.com, you buy the car, we rent it from you for a set period. You stay the legal owner and we pay you up to £600 per month in fixed rental income. No hassle, no maintenance, no tenants. It's a straightforward asset-backed rental agreement. Visit ulezprosperity.com for conditions and to learn more. That's ulezprosperity.com. Simple, steady, secure.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It is 7 minutes after 12 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. So I'm going to continue with this conversation about what has been done and what is being done to our country by the politics of people like Nigel Farage and the failure of the UK media to properly point out who and what he is, culminating today in a fit of fury from newspapers, broadcasters, commentators, that Keir Starmer dared yesterday to offer up some very mild criticism of a man whose own teachers and classmates were calling him racist. 40-odd years ago, more than 40 years ago. It's extraordinary. The Sun called his comments racist 11 years ago. It's a bit like calling grass green, pointing out the racism that has come from Nigel Farage's lips. And don't take my word for it, speak to people he was at school with. And yet our media has apparently developed a bout of collective amnesia. And it is what the difference to the country is that we're looking at next. So I knew this was true when I got it at the weekend. I didn't have that slightly white privilege-y reaction that I had when somebody else prominent in public life told me a couple of years ago that they were thinking of leaving the country. My gut reaction is, oh, it's not that bad. It's not going to get that bad. But I didn't really understand, and I should have done, given what I do for a living, I didn't really understand what would happen when the reality of those four big political victories for the right wing in this country, all cheered and championed, of course, by Nigel Farage. He loved Brexit, he loved Liz Truss's budget, he loved austerity, he loved Boris Johnson, so much so that he stood down his MPs in various constituencies and helped Boris Johnson all the way to Downing Street. He loved all four of those things, and those four victories destroyed the Conservative Party, and the people who cheerlead and champion for that busted flush of a mission, that busted flush of a ideology or platform or whatever you want to call it, they've got nowhere left to put their poison, except in him. So when Keir Starmer dares to point out a couple of elements of Farage's fraudulence, if you like, political fraudulence, moral fraudulence, then of course they're going to have a fit of the vapours, culminating in them pretending that there's something surprising about a prime minister targeting the leader of a party that's currently beating him in the polls. Why are you talking about him? He's only ahead of you in the polls and in possession of season tickets for every right-wing studio in the country. Why on earth are you talking about someone that I talk about all the time? Why on earth are you talking about someone who I invite into my studio to have his toes tickled on a regular basis? Why are you talking about... I mean, it is absolutely extraordinary. But it's also quite encouraging to think that somewhere deep inside, the editor of the Daily Mail knows that he's part of the process that's just been described to us by callers Jen and Somalia and others. And it is to those calls we will return. And there is room for you to join in. How do you describe the change in the national mood? The slow creep towards the kind of racism, the kind of public racism that many people perhaps naively thought had disappeared by the end of the 80s. 0345 6060 973. Leila is in Islington. Leila, what would you like to say?
Hi, good afternoon, James.
Hello.
I'm very happy that you're dedicating your whole show today to talking about this. I think what the Labour Party and Keir Starmer did yesterday was absolutely the greatest things that they could have done. I mean, I, for a short period of time, was losing my faith with the Labour Party, but this has made me come back to Labour. This is what Labour is about. This is what, you know, Britain is about. So what I wanted to say, from the reason why I called in, was actually... what I've noticed is, you know, when this, the change happened, right? I would say, as someone who lives in London, the greatest city in the world, contrary to what Donald Trump says, the change was starting to happen slowly after the BLM movement, but it went on full on steroids since the Southport tragedy, right?
Yeah.
Since the Southport tragedy is when things just went on steroids. It's when racism, Islamophobia started to rise. They've been expressed, but I find it's been expressed actually in a very gendered way. What I'm seeing is men directing their hostility at women, particularly Muslim and minority women who are more visible public spaces. Yes,
more visible by dint of clothing choices sometimes.
Yeah.
Not just skin color.
Yes. And for example, I've had family members who've had their hijab pulled off in the streets, being harassed. I had my daughter and her group of friends be verbally and racially abused by a group of boys. And also, you know, the Home Office has actually said this, right? That, you know, the majority of these predators of hate crime are male, that more and more Muslim women are reporting men abusing them on the streets. So this, to me, isn't just about race or faith alone. It's racism, it's misogyny layered all together. You know, women are being both, you know, targeted, actually.
I hadn't thought of it. I mean, it's interesting that I mean, obviously, I've got other callers, but all of my callers on this so far have been female, feeling it perhaps even more acutely than the men.
Yeah, I think the female, we are getting the sort of heavier burden. We are carrying the burden on the streets from men. I have not experienced any sort of aggression or hostility from women, but mostly men. I mean, I've been, you know, sort of intimidated at a Tesco car park, at all places. My youngest daughter is now off to university for next year, and she's kind of shared with me, she's thinking about looking at universities outside London. And I had to sit down and have a conversation and say, well, you know, certain towns and cities, I wouldn't feel comfortable you being there, right? Because of your race, your gender, you are a Muslim female, that whole intersectionality that comes at play. So while Keir Starmer spoke about unity and, you know, rejecting division, and that's also important, but I think what the leaders now need to do is to address this specific reality of women, Muslim women, women of, you know, ethnicity, different backgrounds like race, and, you know, we also know white women are also experiencing this from, you know, men as well.
It's inadequate angry men, isn't it? And, yes, of course, if, yes, you've given them permission to be racist, then the first people they're going to go after will be women of colour.
James, I don't feel concerned about my son being out, right? I worry about my daughters, very much so. I personally don't feel safe in London, out of all places, to walk down a street at night or during the day now, especially.
Well, yeah, I mean,
transport.
Most women don't. A lot of women don't feel safe at night in any city or town. But you're describing a different dimension, two dimensions of threat. You're describing the misogyny, yes, and the racism. And some women will only be exposed to the misogyny and not to the racism. I'm really sorry that this.
Yeah.
I don't know. This phoning is. I've been doing this a long time, but this one's really got me, and I'm really sorry that you're going through what you're going through, because it's 24 hours a day, isn't it? It's not just
it's
when you're out.
24 hours a day. And I think another caller mentioned as well, you know, sometimes, you know, nothing has to happen, but there, you know, you are now paranoid. You know, yeah. The other day I was walking down the street and there was a white male. He was walking towards me. It was just me and him. It was a quiet road. Yeah. And automatically I started panicking. I would never have done that before Southport incident. I would never have done it. All of a sudden now, you know, and again, I don't want to become someone who is, you know, let's say using biases, judging certain men who look not. A certain type of way. But that's where my mind goes now.
Because you have seen your potential passers-by, your neighbours on the streets in the aftermath of that terrible murder in Southport, after terrible racist lies were disseminated by terrible people, and others took it as a starting whistle, as a starting gun for their bile that had been bottled up for years, including this character, who is, I think no one will be surprised to learn, a councillor for Reform UK, who's subsequently been suspended. But given that Nigel Farage today is whining about threats that he reportedly feels, I can't wait to see Starmer swinging from a lamp post, he wrote, and I'd shoot Starmer myself if I had the weapon and opportunity, wrote John Allen, elected as a councillor in Northumberland on Nigel Farage's ticket. I don't think I've heard him asked about that, but he shouldn't have to be asked. He should have come out and condemned it in the strongest of terms, because that's a blatant threat to an actual Prime Minister. I'd shoot Starmer myself. Thank you, Layla. 12:16 is the time, providing a little bit of context to the evidence being provided by my callers, because there are reasons why this dial has been turned up in recent months, in recent years, and it's not really difficult to work out what those reasons are. But it remains important to remind each other. 12:17 is the time.
LBC.
Amazon Prime Big Deal Days are the 7th and 8th of October. 2 days of big deals on electronics, home, kitchen and more. That'll make you feel less like... and more like... feel like a big deal. Amazon Prime Big Deal Days are the 7th and 8th of October. Exclusively for Prime members. Join Prime now.
Get them class ready with Samsung. Upgrade to the epic Galaxy S25 Ultra and get a free 14-inch Galaxy Chromebook Go worth £399. A laptop for study and streaming and a Galaxy AI-powered smartphone that effortlessly manages your everyday tasks. It's genius, really. Buy before the 2nd of October 2025 from a participating retailer. Claim from Samsung within 30 days of purchase. T's and C's apply.
When BP asked me to read the voiceover for their new Wild Bean Cafe ad, I thought I knew what to expect. But when they told me I'd be reading the script next to a mountain waterfall, on horseback, strumming a harp, in a hailstorm, naked, ow, 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 ow. Well, that was wildly unexpected. Just like Wild Bean Cafe having a freshly ground signature espresso blend for everything from Americanos to flat whites in a fuel station. Wowzers. Wild Bean Cafe. Only at BP. Subject to availability at selected BP stores only.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
12:19 is the time. I just want to read this out because I want Mandy to know that we are here. I am actually trying to text through tears. Because yesterday, in the town where I grew up and felt safe, I was actually born and raised my daughter, I was called the N-word at the supermarket, and all I could do was sit in my car and call my sister and cry that we've come to this. And when I heard Jen on the radio earlier, it really resonated with me. It's so sad. There is also no way to put it, to express your anxiety and your fear. Extraordinary, isn't it? The reality of what people are experiencing, well, those that would once have seen it as their professional responsibility to tell the truth and speak truth to power are instead pandering to the prejudices and the bigotries of Nigel Farage. Des is in Walthamstow. Des, what made you pick up the phone?
James O'Brien.
Here he is.
Oh. I was just, I found out because it was all... looking at it from women's perspective, which is, again, is not a problem.
Of course.
But now, from a black man's perspective, I would say this, that we took this in the early 60s and 70s, National Front, and people spitting in... they're cowards, basically.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, we go now to 2025. The problem what I find in general is that people hear racism and they don't try to stamp it. You go to the builders' merchants, you go to the supermarket or wherever you might go, and people, they hear racism. Because, again, I'm only one spindle within the wheel. Mm. It's going to take for people of my colour and your colour to say, no, we're not having this. And just expose these people, because they're all cowards in the end. They're all cowards. And basically, it's been left to people like you. I mean, you're not really within the realms of the Daily Mail and all these people.
Used to be their video games editor, Des, so full disclosure, mate, I have my burden to bear. I don't want anybody to pretend otherwise.
All right, well, James,
very long time ago.
We ain't got nothing else. We got you. You're our leader.
Well, don't be. So, I mean, it is simply the case that there aren't many places that you can hear the stories that people are queuing up to tell us today, and that is really weird, right? That's just really sad.
It's sad, but then you got to look at it. Not in the 60s. Not in the race riots.
Yeah.
Black people stood alone. Right. Okay. Now. If there's anything happens now, you're going to see white people are going to be there. You're going to see Indian people. You're going to see black people. Because at the end of it, if you stand up to these fools, they go back into their box.
Well, they certainly start whining very, very quickly when they're shown a little bit of retaliation or resistance, just rhetorical retaliation and resistance, just literally holding up mirrors and showing them what they are, and they roll over and start whining almost immediately. And that's the funny thing, and I use the word funny advisedly because there's nothing funny about the stories that we've heard today. But it is amusing to see people who claim to be so tough and claim to be so dedicated to free speech and claim to be so firmly on the side of liberties and freedoms, and then they get cross to the point where the Daily Mail has it on its front page that Keir Starmer accused Nigel Farage of not liking Britain, Des. In the great list of British insults, for going back to Chaucer and Shakespeare and the Anglo-Saxon language, if the worst thing that the man has done is accuse a political rival of not liking Britain, then, and that's front page news for these snowflakes, then we are living in strange, strange times. Yeah, indeed.
We are in strange times. We're in strange times, but for all the people who are being abused and being called a P-word and the N-word and so on, I'm telling you, you got to stand up to these people.
And everyone else on the train has to stand up to them as well.
Frank, that's it. Everybody. Not one person.
No.
Everybody on the train.
And we need to be...
Everybody in the supermarket.
We need to hear that. We need to be reminded of that. You're doing a great job of reminding us. I don't know if you heard Sophia on the programme last week, Sophia Chowdhury, who actually filmed some... And I'm going to say heartbreakingly young. I don't want that to sound sympathetic, but I found their age heartbreaking. Using the P word directly at her on the train, and she said that what hurt the most was actually the reaction of the other adults around her, who either did nothing or, in a couple of cases, actually said, "What are you complaining about? Or why are you filming them? You shouldn't be filming them. They're young," and that is the point you're making brilliantly: is that we're nothing unless we're together, and you don't have to be on the target. You don't have to be on the receiving end of it. You just have to find it repellent. You have to find it disgusting, and you have to stand up and say so. And, of course, to take us back to the first hour, the reason why so many people on the right, in the media particularly, have responded so insanely to Keir Starmer's speech is because they know they're not repelled by it. They know they're actually party to it and, in many ways, responsible for it. And that's why they can't bring themselves to tell the truth about this Farage character. Des, stay safe. 12:24 is the time. Mohammed is in Sheffield. Mohammed, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. You all right?
I'm good, mate. What's on your mind?
James, I first want to share with you an experience. My son, he's 11 year old, and he just started his secondary school. On the very first day of his secondary school, a child from year 11... he asked him, "Oh, when are you going back to your country?" And he said, "What do you mean, my country?" And he said, no, when are you going back to your country? And my child told me that he got upset and he was confused at what he's talking about because he never experienced this before. And then the second question came, what visa you have? What passport you have? And my son came back and he was very upset. I explained him, you know, that this is happening and you might hear a lot of this now. And he was like, "Why am I not British? Am I not English?" I said, "Well, you are, but there are people around here who don't think so. So we have to deal with it." And he said, "How do you want me to deal with it?" And I was
what did you say?
This is what I'm saying. I was not able to explain him. I was not able to tell him that how to deal with it. And this is what I'm very confused about. You know, earlier when I was talking to your producer, I told her that I've been living in UK for 15 years. And I swear to God, I never, ever experienced any kind of any racism in the last 15 years. God. But last 6 months, there are incidents that I can tell you. I've been called Pocky Twat. You know, somebody was trying to take off.
I just dumped that, and I want you to know why, because you used the P word, and you used it very normally and very casually. I don't know if I dumped it in time, but it's not a word that we usually allow to be broadcast on the station. And
I'm sorry for that.
No, I don't want. This is why I'm drawing attention to it. A, because it may have slipped through, in which case I have to apologise because of broadcasting regulations. And B, I don't want you to apologise, because if it's being shouted at you in the street, the idea that you can't say it on the radio is a little bit odd, but it is such a loaded and such an offensive term that I wouldn't allow anyone to say the N-word either. But
I know.
but it is.
If you allow me, I want to tell you one thing.
Carry on.
I moved to Sheffield about 10 years ago from Linden. Yeah.
Yes.
And the street I used to live on, it was full of white working class people. I never had any problem on that street ever. For 12 years I lived on that street. Very recently, a year ago, I moved somewhere else. My son was playing on the street, and a Pakistani family who moved into that street a few weeks ago before this incident, not incident, and their mother came out, and she was talking to my son, and she asked her, where are you from? And he said, Sheffield. And he said, no, I mean, where are you from? Are you Pakistani? He said, no, I'm English. I'm not lying to you. I'm not making this up. He said, no, I'm English. It's a 4-year-old child.
Sure.
And she said, No, I mean, where you originally from? And he said, oh, you mean where my parents are from? And he said, yeah, where your parents are from? And he said, oh, my parents are from Pakistan. Oh, she said, okay. The same month, my son went to year one, and he came back home, and he said, Dad, I want to tell you something. I said, go on. He said, oh, you know, Dad, I don't want to say the name of that girl. He said, I was playing with that girl.
Yes.
And then another girl joined us, and she told the girl I was playing with, oh, let's go play there. And he said, come on, son, let's go there. And she said, no, we're not allowed to play with the brown people. That was the first ever,
15 years in. That's
son
the first.
Had
how do you
this kind of experience?
I thank you for calling me today, and thank you for. Telling the truth about not knowing what to say. I don't like feeling powerless. I wish I could say something. I have got no clue. What do you say to your son in those circumstances when he asks you those questions? He wants to know why this is happening. What do you say?
I tell him that there are good and bad people everywhere, and these are bad people. And they want to divide us.
They're children. They're children. They're not bad people. They've got bad influences on them.
I mean, about their children, obviously, I said they hear from their parents.
Yeah.
Yeah, they hear from their parents, and their parents are not good people. They're talking about these things. These things ought to divide us, but we don't have to listen to these people.
And you will find good people. Yeah, I like that. And I mean, it's not the lot, is it? It's not foolproof, but you could listen to a program like the one we've had today and realize that you are far from alone, and there are loads and loads of people on your quote side.
You know, I was speaking. My wife. Let me just tell you something. My wife.
I'm late for the news, so make it snappy.
Yeah, quickly. My wife went to the Sheffield Town Centre last week. Yeah, after years and years on her own, she came back and she was saying that I am feeling so bad. I said, "What do you mean?" She said, "I was on the tram, and I feel hate in people's eye. Not everybody." But majority of the males on that tram going towards, they were looking at me like with strange gaze. I can't really explain. And I was like, you know what? Don't worry. We're not going to be scared. Yeah. We need to deal with it. And we're not going to just scare and stay home that, some people don't like us on the street or some people don't like us on the tram.
You can't. It's easy for you to say. Well, not easy for you to say, but it is, if she's on her own in town and she's feeling that, whether it's justified or not doesn't really matter. The mood has justified the feeling, and I don't know what I mean, except for what you say, except that you I suppose can try not to be scared, but you can't choose not to be scared. Mohammed, thank you. I'm sorry that I have to sort of curtail the conversation a little quickly. I've got a guest next, and actually Russell was booked to come on the program before the news about Michelle Moan dropped. If you haven't seen the news about Michelle Moan, then it'll probably be in the news bulletin, actually, so that won't work as a hook and tease. But Russell has written a book about VIP lanes during the pandemic. It inspired an ITV documentary that you may have seen recently, The COVID Contracts Follow the Money. So it's one of those moments of radio serendipity that the author of VIP Lane, Cronyism and the Pandemic joins me on the day that we discover one of the greatest beneficiaries of that VIP lane has been hit with a potential £122 million fine. And you'll learn why I use the word potential after the very latest headlines with Dominic Ellis.
The Energy Secretary, Ed Miliband, has announced plans to ban fracking. He's told Labour's conference in Liverpool that drilling for gas and oil from shale rock is dangerous and deeply harmful. Reform UK's head of policy has called on Sir Keir Starmer to apologise for what he calls the unprecedented vilification of Nigel Farage. Zia Youssef has criticised the Prime Minister's description of the party's immigration plans as racist. And a company linked to the Conservative peer, Baroness Moan, has been ordered to repay the government more than £120 million. PPE Medpro has been found to have breached a contract to supply surgical gowns during the pandemic. LBC weather, dry and sunny for many this afternoon. Some heavy rain for northern parts of the UK. Highs of 19 degrees.
This is LBC.
At Amazon, over 50% of deliveries now come with less packaging or with no added packaging at all. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where you chat with friends, where your neighbour's daughter practices guitar, and where we deliver your new noise-cancelling headphones in the manufacturer's packaging. Ah, much better. Reduced packaging from Amazon. We're delivering change where it matters, on your doorstep. Based on 2024 UK and EU Amazon packaging data.
Fraud can happen faster than you think. But at Barclays, we use innovative technology that spots fraud in under a second. And our dedicated team of experts work 24/7. So you can go about your day knowing we never stop working to keep you and your money safe. Search Barclays Fraud Protection to see how you can stay one step ahead. Barclays, make money work for you.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. HolidayParkAdviceCentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Get them class ready with Samsung. Upgrade to the epic Galaxy S25 Ultra and get a free 14-inch Galaxy Chromebook Go worth £399. A laptop for study and streaming and a Galaxy AI-powered smartphone that effortlessly manages your everyday tasks. It's genius, really. Buy before the 2nd of October 2025 from a participating retailer. Claim from Samsung within 30 days of purchase. T's and C's apply.
James O'Brien on LBC.
It is 12:35. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. There it is. PPE Medpro, a company linked to the Tory peer Michelle Moan, must repay the government more than £121 million for breaching a contract to supply 25 million surgical gowns during the coronavirus pandemic. But as our colleague has been explaining, there's only about 600 grand left in the business. So I don't know. I don't have the expertise or the qualifications to comment on how likely it is that taxpayers will see all of the £121 million that they have been called to repay. And by an extraordinary twist of fate, I'm joined in the studio by Russell Scott, who was a producer on a television programme that you may have seen last week, the COVID contract, Follow the Money, which was itself spawned by a book published tomorrow, VIP Lane, Cronyism and the Pandemic. Which way round was it? What inspired? So the book inspired the documentary, but the documentary came out before the book.
Yeah, in a nutshell.
That's showbiz, isn't it? And of course you didn't know, and I didn't know, that on the day that we sat down to talk about the book, and to a lesser extent the documentary, the Michelle Moan story would land in our collective laps. Why did you want to write this?
A good question. I think if we sort of cast our minds back to 2020, when we're all at home, sort of trying to do our bit for our communities, and you sort of start seeing images on the news of nurses wearing bin bags because there's no PPE, and you've got Matt Hancock coming on daily on a TV sort of saying everything's okay, there is PPE, it's getting to the front line. As a journalist, that sort of raises your suspicions.
Yeah.
So I started looking.
God, yeah, I mean, you put it like that. Yeah. It's like, hello, Sherlock. There's a doctor, there's a nurse in a bin bag, and there's the Secretary of State for Health saying, everything's fine, everything's fine.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, exactly.
Okay,
and,
yeah.
And as the sort of contracts for PPE started being published, you know, you sort of scratch beneath the surface. It doesn't take long to realise there's hundreds of millions of pounds worth of contracts going to companies that have either just been set up, no experience providing PPE, and quite often directors or associates linked directly back to the Conservative Party.
How quickly did you establish that at the time?
I think within a few sort of weeks of the contracts being published, you could sort of see a pattern sort of coming out there where it only seemed to be one political party, in this case the Tories, where these certain individuals, whether it was a Lord here or an MP there, had links.
But we didn't know at the time that there was a VIP lane.
No.
I think, so it just looked like an extraordinary coincidence.
Yeah, and I think what really broke it open was in sort of October 2020, the Good Law Project were leaked some documents from inside government that pretty much just spelled out this VIP sort of channel where offers that had been referred by MPs or members of the House of Lords were sort of given preferential treatment, fast-tracked to the front of the queue. And it was spelled out in like a flow chart that was leaked to the Good Law Project. So
That's Julian Malm's operation, the Good Law Project, for people not fully aware of the organisation. They do extraordinary work in a variety of fields, but they really got busy on this.
Yeah, and that's what they hired me sort of in late 2020. And in fact, the very first story I published with them was alongside David Conn, was in fact on PPE MedPro. And we were, again, leaked information that suggested that they were one of the companies channeled through this VIP lane. And what was interesting, at the time, the lawyers for Baroness Moen and Doug Barrowman flat out refused that they had anything to do with this company or the award of the contract. So sort of fast forward 5 years, there's sort of some vindication there for the Good Law Project and journalists like David Conn, who have been on this for 5 years.
And indeed you. And to be absolutely clear, because it merits repetition, even though many people listening will already be aware of it, the appearance on this VIP lane, the prominence, the priority given to these companies, had absolutely nothing to do with provenance or track record. This wasn't a case of them going, well, these people have done loads of great work in the field of PPE. Mm. These people have been providing good, safe masks for years. These people have got an amazing record in the provision of personal protective equipment. The only thing that qualified them for promotion was friendship with or association with people close to Downing Street, people close to the top of the Tory party.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, yeah, if your offer was referred by a politician, that was enough to get you into the VIP lane and to the front of the queue. It wasn't based on sort of track record. We know there's many companies that are on the VIP lane that had no track record at all providing PPE.
They set them up, in some cases, literally, to... Yep. So I remember talking to Carol Vorderman about this not long ago. And she said, some of us sat there when COVID started and thought, what can I do to help? Mm. And some people sat there, all of whom turned out to be very close to the leadership of the Conservative Party and therefore to Downing Street, and thought, how can I make money out of it?
Absolutely.
How can I make money out of this global pandemic and the deaths arising on a daily basis? Why isn't my bank balance, they asked.
Mm. Yeah, and that's definitely the sort of pattern we noticed, especially with PPE MedPro. They didn't exist prior to the pandemic, and within a matter of days of being set up, they were given, you know, £200 million for a PPE contract.
So I'm going to make some phone calls, and I'm going to buy some masks from someone on the other side of the world, and then I'm going to sell them to my government with a massive blooming markup on them. It's that simple, right?
Yeah, and I think what's interesting is no other country went down this route. There's no record of any other country setting up a VIP lane. So we didn't have to go down this route.
And other people couldn't get through. I always remember taking a call from a woman who worked for a company that made ventilators who couldn't get through. Mm. And she wanted to give some ventilators to the NHS. This is a supplier that often sells them, but she couldn't find the government point of entry in which to make that offer.
And so with ventilators, there was a company actually called Excalibur Healthcare, and they're also a VIP lane supplier of PPE after they contacted Matt Hancock directly. Now, the government placed an order for £134 million for ventilators with them, and we didn't use any of them. In fact, we ended up auctioning them off for 50 quid each, having paid £50,000 each for them. And that's just a sort of a typical example of the sort of extreme waste.
And the book is full of these examples.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
to the point almost where you feel you might drown in them.
Yeah, and I think just as a sort of an example, on PPE alone, the government spent £13 billion. As a comparison to other European countries like Germany, you see their sort of expenditure was around the sort of £3 billion mark. And as a result, we've written off £10 billion worth of this.
Billion?
£10 billion has been written off, of which £8.6 billion, which equates to about 1 million pallets of PPE, have now been incinerated. So this is stuff that's been in shipping containers for 5 years, has just tipped into the back of a lorry and driven to an incinerator plant.
It was, I think, at Rachel Reeves' speech, they talked about clawing back some of this money. But, of course, it's going to be notoriously difficult because the company sort of gone into administration, or the company will be on the hook. The people who were the directors or the founders or the owners of the company will not be personally or directly on the hook. But how do you avoid the despair, if you like, Russell? It's a question I sometimes get asked about other elements of politics and current affairs in this country. But these people are laughing on their yachts, metaphorical or otherwise, having rinsed the Treasury for billions of pounds in return for buttons.
Yeah, it can be a bit demoralising sometimes to look at this sort of year after year. I think what we... for me, the Baroness Moan case, PP Medical case, is the sort of tip of the iceberg. And I know guests on your show in the past, Daniel Bruce from Transparency National, sort of flagged that their organisation has highlighted sort of £15 billion worth of contracts that raise sort of red flags. And the documentary and the book highlights a number of those cases. And I think hopefully this may spur on the government to go after more of these supplies to try and claw back.
But it's
back
all there. You've
money.
Put it together for them. And then we've got the COVID testing makes a big part of the book and indeed of the documentary as well.
Yeah, I think what a lot of people don't yet know is that there wasn't just one VIP lane, there was actually two. So the government also set up a similar high priority route for the procurement of COVID tests and labs and things like that. And it was a very similar process. So a secretive email account was set up, it was shared with government ministers and literally ministers and MPs, again, from the Conservative Party, were basically encouraged to forward their offers on, and in the header of the email put VIP or fast track. And the way they went, something like 75% of contracts placed for COVID tests during this period were via this VIP route. I mean, just one example of that, there's a company called Innova Medical. Now, they didn't exist before the pandemic. They were set up in March 2020 as we were all going into lockdown. And they basically procured COVID tests from China. They didn't make anything themselves. They just procured them as sort of basically a broker. The American authorities were encouraging US citizens to literally throw these tests in the trash. They didn't think they were accurate enough. But we just kept throwing billions of pounds at this company. In the end, they were awarded £4 billion plus worth of contracts. And the owner of that company, a guy called Charles Wang, has sort of recently been in a documentary sort of boasting about making $2 billion profit. At last count, we sort of found $70 million of private jets that he's brought off the back of the profits on his contracts, £18 million mansion, you know. And this
was all legaled by ITV.
Yeah, this is in the documentary.
Just checking.
Yeah. This is all in the documentary and in the book. And they were fast-tracked after brokers for the company reached out to Dominic Cummins. That's how they found their way onto the priority.
Now, there's a name. I feel like I'm appearing in a second-rate B-movie there. My little ears just picked up. There's a name I haven't heard for a while. Yeah, great. How have companies responded to you? I mean, because I presume a lot of them simply don't exist anymore.
There's a combination of companies that certainly a growing number are going bust. We've seen that with or have got very little assets, which we can see with PP MedPro, companies like SG Recruitment. There's also companies that are offshore,
because it was a one-hit wonder. They literally existed for this window. The owners took all the money out, all the profits out, and there's nothing left. It feels almost like a heist, albeit that, you know, no laws were broken in many of these cases.
It is a good point. I mean, in terms of how the government now goes about trying to recoup this money, it's going to be difficult. I think there's certain steps that could be put in place to try and make sure it doesn't happen again, in terms of terms of laws and things like that.
It's as if it's not what you know, it's who you know, became government policy at every level.
Absolutely.
At a time of desperate need for actual expertise and experience, they instead went with, well, I went to school with his brother.
Yeah, and I think it sort of reads like that, because when you look at the facts, across both the VIP lanes, only referrals from one political party were sort of successful in getting contracts. There were no sort of cases or evidence yet that suggest a referral from a Labour politician or a Lib Dem politician or an SNP politician went on to then win a VIP lane contract. So it feels very much like a bit of a closed shop. But
yeah, very much. Is anyone going to be on the hook for it? Anyone in government going to be? I mean, could we get Dominic Cummings to held to account for pushing? I mean, I don't know what they would be held to account for, but are they all just going to walk away? A lot of them are no longer in public life.
It's a good question. And I think that's what we sort of try and highlight in the film, really, is that what about the PP Medpro case is very important,
yes,
and rightfully so, has got the sort of a lot of limelight, but it is the tip of the iceberg. There are lots of cases like this, and in particular linked to sort of rather sort of Tory grandeur in the House of Lords, and all of these sort of characters and the various lords that are mentioned in the documentary in the book, you know, they're still sitting in the House of Lords. There's sort of very little sort of consequences for them yet.
Yeah, that's a good question. It's a repeating theme of the last few years in this country. Terrible things have happened, and the people who did them have not faced any consequences. When my copy of this book arrives tomorrow, how many pages will I get into it before I hurl it across the room in fury?
Maybe the introduction, I'm not sure.
Russell Scott, whose book VIP Lane, Cronyism and the Pandemic, is out tomorrow. The documentary, The COVID Contracts, Follow the Money, is available now on ITVX, albeit both should probably come with a health warning or certainly a blood pressure warning. But it's important that we keep telling these stories because some extremely powerful people are very keen that people like Russell don't carry on telling these stories and getting these facts out there. And that's not an opinion, it's counting.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
If you're a black or Asian British citizen or a settled legal migrant of any skin colour, who's on your side? Keir Starmer or Nigel Farage?
Sheila Fogarty on LBC.
That quiet moment behind the wheel. The perfect space to get your thoughts in order. With the stylish HRV Hybrid, you get the head-turning design you want with the space and flexibility you actually need. Because every journey matters. Explore the full Honda range online at honda.co.uk. Honda, the power of dreams.
Private healthcare sounds pricey.
At Benenden Health, it's less than £16 per person per month.
Just for GP calls.
For a 24/7 GP helpline, physio, diagnostics and more. Now, tell me.
All about my medical history.
No medical questionnaires or hidden charges. We like to call it
healthcare done different.
Spot on. Benenden Health. Healthcare done different. Fee review periodically. 6-month wait for some services. T&Cs apply. Selected surgical procedures after 6 months. 24 in Northern Ireland. UK only. Visit benenden.co.uk.
Get them class ready with Samsung. Upgrade to the epic Galaxy S25 Ultra and get a free 14-inch Galaxy Chromebook Go worth £399. A laptop for study and streaming and a Galaxy AI-powered smartphone that effortlessly manages your everyday tasks. It's genius, really. Buy before the 2nd of October 2025 from a participating retailer. Claim from Samsung within 30 days of purchase. T's and C's apply.
This year, Amazon are increasing the electric delivery vehicles we use across Europe to 10,000. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where babies are made a fuss of, where we deliver footballs for kids' kickabouts, and where they deliver the football straight into next door's garden. Can they have their ball back, please? We're delivering change where it matters, on your doorstep. Delivery service partner vehicles across the UK and EU.
One of the best things about a holiday with Saga is your chauffeur, who'll pick you up and drive you to your departure point. Whether you're cruising through Europe's iconic cities along the Danube or enjoying a rainforest tour through Costa Rica. Even better, they'll pick you up and drive you home again afterwards. 2026 season now on sale. Search Saga Holidays. Experience is everything. Nationwide chauffeur service available on UK mainland. Full terms apply. Over 50s only.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
It is 12:52. I like this from Steph, and it actually reminds me of something that I meant to tell you yesterday. I've just phoned the council about the flags, James. They told me that there are no funds to remove the ones that are high up on the lampposts. I think we should all hang multinational flags everywhere as well, because we are all in it together. I saw that in Worcester. I don't know whether that is commonplace or whether that is unique, but I was in Worcester at the weekend, and as I made my way up Foregate Street, which is the sort of main high street in Worcester, I noted some flags, and every single one was accompanied by a flag from somewhere else. I saw a couple of Palestinian flags. I saw a Jamaican flag, which I happen to recognise. I saw some European Union flags. So I don't know what happened there, whether or not some people went out at night because they think patriotism is about putting up flags, rather than, for example, doing the kind of work that Russell's done in pursuing the billions and billions of pounds that were effectively nicked from us all during the pandemic by mates and cronies of the Tories. And then the next night, or in broad daylight, actually, other people went out and started putting up the Swiss flag, or I don't know, but it has actually happened, Steph, your idea, brilliant though it is, because I saw it with my very own eyes. And speaking of messages, this, as you will gather in the course of me reading it out, is from someone that I know outside of my work on the radio. That lady who said she feels paranoid about the general vibe around her is spot on, James. It happens every day now as I walk the dog. The subtle looks and the double takes. I say good morning to put a figurative hand out, and sometimes that does the job. But more times than I can mention lately, I get blanked. I say to my other half, who, as you know, is white, that I wish I had a body cam on sometimes so she can see that I'm not being paranoid and that these things really are happening. Now more than ever, I fear for the future, especially for my kids, much more so than when we spoke about this last year. As I've said to you before, I know how lucky we are to have a place in France in the middle of nowhere to retreat to. France has its problems, but I feel I know where I stand there. I was born here, but feel more and more that I shouldn't be investing in a future here. 12:54 is the time. Angela is in Sidcup. Angela, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. Hello. Thank you for having me on. No. I'm a big fan, and I'm incredibly nervous.
It's
but I just wanted
me.
To say,
it's only me. God.
Yeah, and I just wanted to say, basically, I've been listening to the conversation, and I think that the damage that's been done to communities like mine. I obviously live in Sidcup, and just walking down a street, you actively, as a black woman, you actively have to have a smile on your face. I feel like I need to make sure that I appear friendly. And I just have this thing in the back of my mind that I don't know what on earth this person thinks of me, whether they like me, whether they want me here. Sidcup is an area that where I live is 10 minutes away from where Stephen Lawrence was murdered. Yeah, in Eltham. And I grew up near Eltham, and growing up at that time, it was my formative years. And I remember knowing and actively thinking that the people that killed this person, you know, their community, this is the community I'm living in. And I genuinely thought that we'd moved past that. I was so proud of, you know, being British for so long, until this change has happened with
when did
reform.
You feel that? When did you feel that start? If you indeed you can put
I think it
a moment on.
Yeah, I think there is a particular moment that comes to mind, and it was when that IUD, I think it was like a mini bomb that was blown up on a ULEZ camera in my area. That was literally behind my house. And it didn't get a lot of press attention, but it was a big thing for me, because I realised that these issues are very, very close to me and my children and my family. Yeah, and I think that in the back of my mind, you just don't know who's part of this movement. You could be talking
to
anyone.
And for people who may be confused as to why those two things would be linked, quite a lot of the anti-ULEZ, and I witnessed this in extraordinary fashion when I hosted an event with the Mayor of London, Sadiq Khan, it became a sort of proxy target for people who felt racial hatred towards the Mayor of London. So I'm sure there are plenty of people who objected to ULEZ on perfectly reasonable and sensible grounds, but a lot of the very loudest voices also coincidentally had very disgusting and often racist and Islamophobic things to say about the Mayor of London. So that's why you tie the two together.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And I think that those two things, the ULEZ thing, there are legitimate arguments, but they are extremely connected. And a lot of the people that...
There aren't any legitimate arguments. I'm just saying that some of the mugs who fell for it may not be racists. That's all.
Yeah, absolutely. And even the flags, they're outside of my kids' primary school and all over my area. And they've painted the roundabouts as well. And these are people that are in the community. And it's very difficult to feel safe. It's very difficult to be a part of just normal day-to-day life because you just don't know. I mean, I do a workout class of the local mums, and even in these sessions, you just don't feel comfortable because you just don't know what the conversations are.
That's a terrible thing. That's what I'm taking away from today's show, which I wouldn't ever experience myself.
Yeah.
I can only hear it from people like you and the friend whose message I read out. And it's that notion that you know everyone. You know the massive majority of people are good and decent and kind. But once you allow this poison back into the public bloodstream, you've got no way of knowing who's carrying it.
Exactly. And it's explaining yourself and it's making sure that you know, I'm a working mum. I don't sit at home. Making sure that, you know, you're not taking benefits.
No, you're already justifying yourself to me. You don't need to do that.
Yeah. You don't need to do that.
But that's the environment that he's created. The idea that you have to justify yourself to me or to my callers. I've had that forever on the program, particularly people who weren't born here, as you were, saying that things I've never claimed benefits. But that's not something you should feel the need to establish. If you've paid your taxes, or even if you're poorly and you've never paid any taxes, this is what a country does. It's what a society does. It looks after its members, all of them, all the shoulders that are to the wheel get cared for. Thank you, Angela. Well, I don't know whether I want to use the word depressing or disheartening, but what an ugly picture many of our callers have painted today. But how much confidence I can draw, I don't think matters, but I hope you can draw some confidence from the knowledge that the massive majority is now and always will be utterly repulsed by much of what has been described to us today, even as much of our media unites to soft soap it, excuse it, or even perhaps cause it. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on Catch Up on Global Player and the LBC app. You can stay up to date on the top stories and opinions. You can put your news categories in the order you want, as well as pause and rewind live radio and listen to a range of podcasts. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. Tom Swarbrick will be with you at 4, but now it's Sheila Fogarty.
Thank you very much, James. At 3 today, Wes Streeting has ordered a review to find out if there's a problem in our country of overdiagnosis of mental illness. It comes separately as the singer Lola Young takes an indefinite break from performing. Are we any better at recognising and responding to mental ill health, our own or anybody else's? We'll talk about that at 3. At 2, business was given something of an apology in yesterday's prime ministerial speech, or at least a thank you. I wonder, do you, businessmen and women of this great nation, do you accept it? But I'll start with the question. If you're a black or Asian British citizen or a settled legal migrant of any skin colour whatsoever, who do you say is on your side? Sir Keir Starmer or Nigel Farage?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, the Energy Secretary has announced plans to pass a new law to ban fracking for shale gas permanently in England. Ed Miliband has told Labour's conference in Liverpool that drilling for gas and oil from shale rock is deeply harmful. Mr. Miliband also attacked Reform UK, warning it would trash the UK's climate commitments.
It will not create long-term sustainable jobs, and it is dangerous and deeply harmful to our natural environment. Friends, the good news is that communities have fought back and won this fight before and will do so again. Friends, got a message for you. We sent those frackers packing. I say let's ban fracking and vow to send this bunch of frackers packing too.
Reform UK's head of policy has called on Sir Keir Starmer to apologise for what he calls the unprecedented vilification of Nigel Farage. Zia Yusuf has criticised the Prime Minister's description of the party's immigration plans as racist. Sir Keir made the remarks at the weekend, later insisting that he didn't believe Mr Farage or Reform's voters were racist. A company linked to the Conservative peer, Baroness Mohn, has been ordered to repay the government more than £120 million. PPE Medpro has been found to have breached a contract to supply surgical gowns during the pandemic. LBC's Joseph Draper had been following the High Court ruling.
They've now got to pay the full £122 million back to the government with a deadline of 2 weeks. And the judge explained exactly what went wrong with the gowns that they were got the contract to supply to the government. And essentially, they were not sterile when they were delivered into the country.
Baroness Mohn has described the judgment as a result of an establishment cover-up. Six men have been charged with sexual offences against girls in West Yorkshire in the 1990s. They're accused of offences including rape, false imprisonment and indecent assault in the Kirklees area between 1994 and 1998. The men are due to appear before magistrates tomorrow. And from today, all GP practices in England must offer online consultation system from 8 in the morning until 6:30 in the evening. The Doctors Union, the BMA, has threatened action over the changes, saying it could overwhelm the system. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 60 at 94.11. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.14. LBC weather dry and sunny for many this afternoon. Some heavy rain developing for northern parts of the UK with highs of 19 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
We were a noisy generation, but it might be something quiet we do that becomes our greatest legacy. Leave a gift in your will to the British Heart Foundation and fund groundbreaking research that could help save millions of lives. Search BHF Wills.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there, good afternoon to you if you're just joining us here at LBC. No big set piece speeches from politicians today, just you and me having a chat about still some of the content of those speeches, but the Labour Party conference over for now. Anyway, the next big moment, I suppose, is the budget, when we'll find out exactly what decisions they're making based on the kind of vision, I suppose, that Keir Starmer was attempting to set out in his speech yesterday. And as I said to you yesterday, and I've been talking about it or kicking back at people who are kicking me about it on social media a little, I thought, for me anyway, the standout parts of the speech were when he did set out something of a vision of the Britain that he recognises and wants to live in and wants to renew, to use his word, and wants to help to grow. Big elements of that, not exclusively, but big parts of that were about making a distinction between him and Nigel Farage and between Labour government and Reform UK. I'm not particularly going to get into the weeds of people arguing as to how often he mentioned Reform. I think it's perfectly natural that he mentioned Reform a lot and took on that very message that is clearly proving popular in the country. It's his job to take on a message that is proving popular in the country and engaging with it. Listening, he said he's listening, but also drawing some lines. And he said, didn't he, explicitly, there are lines. There are lines, and he believes there are lines that Reform UK and Nigel Farage are crossing. And he drew those lines. So one of the things I want to ask you today is, and we'll hear the section where I think he's started to draw those lines of difference and distinction. Not particularly keen to talk with you about him being supposedly obsessed with Nigel Farage. He certainly needs to be alive to the threat of Reform. Of course he does. He's a politician. He's in power and he wants to keep power. That's almost so obvious. It's dull to say. I'm more interested in how you feel about the things he said directly to you. You as a citizen, you as a citizen who may be black, who may be Asian, you as somebody who has settled status here of one form or another, and or any colour, black, white, brown, whatever. What you feel about what he said about the drawing of that line, those distinctions between him and Nigel Farage, distinctions between Labour and Reform UK on the country that they wish to represent, to continue to represent, or in Reform's case, to represent in government down the line. Here's what Starmer said yesterday.
If you say or imply that people cannot be English or British because of the colour of their skin, that mixed heritage families owe you an explanation, that people who've lived here for generations, raised their children here, built their lives here, working in our schools, our hospitals, running businesses, are our neighbours. If you say they should now be deported, then mark my words, we will fight you with everything we have, because you are the enemy of national renewal.
I loved that section. I loved that section of his speech because of what it was saying about people legally here, either because they are British citizens born into this country, or because they have settled status of one form or another that may well become citizenship down the line. But I'm glad as well that he included born and bred British citizens who aren't white explicitly, that if you look at them and say, not really British, not really English, you're a racist. It's true. You're a racist. It's just true. Or at least if you're not an out-and-out active getting out there and being a racist every day, some scales need to fall from your eyes about it. Because they are your neighbours. They're not illegally here in any way. And what I want to know is, if you fall into those categories, if you are a British citizen of colour or a foreign-born person with legal status to be here, of any colour, who best represents you? Nigel Farage or Keir Starmer? So I'm not talking about who's obsessed with who. I'm not asking you whether Nigel Farage is a racist or not. You'll quietly, privately in your own home, make your own decisions about that. But in terms of who represents you, I think it's an important question because Nigel Farage's party